right, welcome back to the I'm There podcast, and today we have a very, very special stream slash recording going on here. So this is the Champions Ball, and we have two previous winners with us. We have OG, aka Gary, one of our really good and close friends, and we also have Stango, because both of these people won events back to back on back to back weekends. So
different games.
Yes, very different games. Most people who do know Stango in this world know him as a fighting game player. He was one of the best Melee players ever when he did play competitively right before the pandemic. And OG is a now Edison player after the last like 2 years. Same time I got in it, he got in it as well. But he recently won RBET that happened, what was it, like March 2nd and 3rd? And then Stango won Nickelodeon's All-Star Brawl at Genesis, right? Was that Genesis?
Yep, it was at Genesis.
Yeah, so we got champions with us today. You guys have taken back-to-back weekend, and it's crazy because, you know, we have our little group. It's called The House, and I've mentioned this on several different podcasts and sometimes on YouTube videos, but our group chat, you know, there's 10 of us in there because that's the max the Discord would allow. We don't have an official server, although we probably at some point will need to make one for literally
make
the
house. It easier.
It would make things easier, I think, to just have The House Discord, but we do have our group chat. Our group chat's been going 4 years strong. Like, it's been going 4 years strong. Everyone who's in it is in it. If you're not in it, then it's just kind of like, all right, there's no room for anyone else. Some people, we got some late people in there. Like, we got our own Jinbei. Like, Jalen is clearly our Jinbei. He came at the last minute. If you know One Piece references, he's a very late member. But I do want to talk about you guys' wins over these last two weekends. Let's start with Stango, because yours was first. Yours was at Genesis, which is one of the biggest tournaments. I didn't know that they would have other games like that. I thought that it was just a Smash tournament, because Genesis, historically, from my perspective, I've never been, but from my perspective, it's always been like one of the biggest Smash tournaments in the world every year.
Yeah, I mean, Genesis, for the most part, is known for like mostly its Smash tournaments, but they have a bunch of like kind of events there, and they're mostly all like fighting game oriented. And
yeah,
same
they
thing
also,
with
I was going to say, a lot of the big Smash tournaments, as years have gone on and more Smash likes have come out, they're pretty receptive to the Smash likes. So they'll try to do a Rivals of Aether. Like, I think Rivals of Aether was at Genesis too.
That was that's the main thing, is that like a lot of the Smash like games, they pretty much like go to you know, as events as Genesis, as kind of like side events. Mm-hmm. But Genesis is typically like the Evo for those games as well at Genesis. Mm-hmm. Those are usually the biggest tournaments, just because, like, you know, California is such a large state. A grand majority of a lot of players like live in the West Coast and stuff like that. And also, Genesis doesn't really skimp on like the event running for like side events. Like, you'll have certain tournaments, like, let's say, for example, like Combo Breaker or something. Like, Combo Breaker is pretty good in like pretty big in Ultimate or like Frostbite and stuff like that. Or like Collision, like, you know, those kind of events. And there will be side events like Rivals of Aether and other, you know, Smash like games, but they're not going to be as grand scale as Genesis as far as like the floor space. And you at Genesis, like, if your game is generally pretty big, like Rivals of Aether, you know, older Smash titles that like get some limelight, like Smash 64, like still used to, but pretty much got the top eight stage on Sunday before all the other games.
That's pretty cool.
So they got the ballroom top eight, you know, years before.
That's something I really like about, I want to say Evo started that, where, you know, you'd have a bunch of different games at your tournament over the weekend. And on top eight day, on Sunday, you would have the top eights. It'll be like Mortal Kombat, and then Soul Calibur, and then Tekken, and then, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and then Street Fighter. And then, like, they would go into an order with like the biggest one being at the end. And it was really cool. I like when tournaments do stuff like that. Like, if you have a top eight day Sunday and you do like Rivals of Aether and Nickelodeon All Stars Brawl and, I don't know, Slap City or something, even though that game's dead. and then, you know, you got Smash 64, Melee, Smash Ult. I mean, I guess Slap City has more players than Brawl, so, you know, there's that.
Yeah, I mean, Brawl was actually at Genesis. It had about
this
over
year
70 people. Yeah.
Oh shit.
How many people? Yeah. Over 70 people.
No, which, that's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's not bad
for what's considered the worst Smash game. Yeah, that's pretty good. That is 70 people. 70 tryhards.
But yeah, as far as like Nickelodeon All Star Brawl, or you know, as we will all call, to save a mouthful, NASB2 is the shortening.
So this game, Nickelodeon's All Star Brawl, NASB, It is a Smash clone. It is a platform fighting game. Came out a couple years ago, the first one did, during the pandemic. And I believe it has a bunch of characters that, you know, they're all very known. Like SpongeBob's in it. You got like Wild Thornberry's characters. I remember at one point the Ninja Turtles were in this game. Yeah, there's just a lot of recognizable characters. And
yeah, it's just a lot of Nickelodeon IPs. So yeah, just the same way with Nintendo, Mario, Luigi, Donkey Kong, you just have the Nickelodeon IPs are like the mascots of the game.
Nick, do you feel you were destined to be great at this game? Do you feel that all of the years that you played Melee, it was just to be great at the game named after you?
That's Nickelodeon Nick.
You know?
So, I mean, the main thing about this game is that I actually played the first NASBY. Overall, I did like the game. The scene didn't really kind of last too long because the early launch of the game had a lot of problems. There was a lot of bugs.
I
want to
talk about that, too, with these platform fighters that come out. I definitely want to touch on this topic, but go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of bugs. Character balance in the beginning was really, really rough. There wasn't
also
even
just
voice
no
acting.
Voice acting. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
There was no
voice acting in the first one for like several months.
So, like, empty.
It was very soulless. Yeah.
Soulless.
Yeah, it felt very cash grabby for some people, and like that definitely waned on the interest for sure. Later on, the game actually got pretty good. Balance got a lot better. There was voice acting. And
this
a lot
is
of
the first
bugs
one you're talking
that,
about.
Yeah, the first one. Like,
the problem with
pretty
that
much,
is the problem with they, that is they, that they, when they fix things later, though, a lot of the people have already moved on. And
that's
this,
what I was saying. They missed the mark.
Games. Yeah, it happens
in
games all the time.
They, you know, in the world of gaming, especially because it's very cutthroat. Because I feel nowadays, like, even though there are times where gamers can get a little swindled from time to time with certain games or ideas. Gamers are a lot more distrustful of things, and they're not really so eager to like soul love something if it's not good in the very beginning. If it's not good in the very beginning, gamers nowadays, I feel, they'll move on. There's too many games nowadays to like trap people into an experience that they're not enjoying.
Yeah, I think you guys remember No Man's Sky?
I do remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Kenny talked about it all the time.
Terrible launch.
They actually somehow, and it took years.
Yeah, they
years
it
of hard walk, but they brought it back, but it took fucking years for them to like get people to come back to it. Oh yeah, but what I was going to say about Nickelodeon All Stars Brawl blah, 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 is that it's interesting because when they launched the second one, I remember initially feeling like, man, I feel like the first one just came out.
Me too.
And you guys were just fixing the problems with it, and now you're releasing the second one. And I thought the fact that they're releasing the second one felt cash grabby. But then as time went on, I realized, like, if they didn't release a new game for the reasons that Fraser just said earlier, nobody would have cared. Basically, by the time they fixed the first one, everybody had moved on. So even though they were releasing DLC and updates, everybody had moved on, and so there was nothing to bring them back. The fact that they made a second game and called it number two, the fact that it's a, even if they literally made exactly what this is as like an update to the first one in order to like not take people's money again, nobody would have looked at it, even though it would have been free because everybody moved on from that game. The fact that they made it a brand new game, it made people look at it again. Even though it created a little bit of a stigma where people were like, I already bought this game, I don't want to buy it again. I think ultimately it actually worked in their favor because it got eyes to look at it again and be like, oh, this is a new game. And
at the very least, I didn't know that there was a second one, but as far as the fixes that happened in the first one, I had no idea. So
exactly. The
first one was just a dead game to me. And this is something that I feel like I experience a lot with these platform fighters. So going back to the previous topic of bringing that up, I just feel like a lot of these games that come out, these microwavable Smash games, because that's what they all feel like, they're just a clone, usually of Melee specifically too. They're usually a clone of Melee because it's like the glory days of Smash, and they try to put all of the things in it that Melee players love, make them really competitive, and you got like your wave dashing mechanics and stuff like that. But then something goes wrong in the heart and soul of the game. It's just like missing something dire, sometimes multiple things dire, and then people play it for like 3 weeks. You get a lot of content on it. You get a lot of competitive people on it. There's some big cash tournament, and then after that, the shit just crashes and burns. And we saw this with Multiverses last year at Evo.
Bro?
So, yeah, Multiverse. Like, where's Multiverses now? Because Void won Multiverses.
Actually gone.
They're coming back.
Are they?
They're, They are. They literally are. They are relaunching the game, and apparently
that game had Arya Stark, LeBron James, Bugs Bunny, fucking like Daffy Duck.
I think the problem with that game too, I mean, I think that game had multiple problems, but I do think one of the problems is I feel like it's too random. Like Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl, it's like, okay, these are Nickelodeon characters. It's SpongeBob. It's fucking Wild Thornberries. It's the Rugrats. It's fucking...
Yeah, it's all the things whatever. That you remember on Channel 33 if you live in where we, you know, East Coast, Philadelphia area.
With multiverses, it was like Superman, Bugs Bunny, which, okay,
Sure.
And then Arya Stark, which is like...
Okay, like how we get here. And then Wonder
and
Woman
then
and LeBron
James? And it's like okay, what the fuck is this game?
Like, what happened? Yeah, they all just have, like, something wrong. I think that because Smash, especially lately, Smash Ultimate is Mugen, right? If you remember Mugen from the you know, early 2000s, Mugen is a game that essentially anyone could edit and add fighting game characters into it. It was a fighting game, kind of based on, like, Marvel's Capcom 2 is the skeleton of it, it felt like. And then you could just... have characters that people created and download them into the game, and it could be as big as a cast as you wanted it to be. So Smash Ultimate now has like Sora and Sephiroth and Cloud and Ryu and Ken and Banjo and Kazooie and characters from like Fire Emblem and Pokemon characters and all the other Nintendo characters, right? And it seems a little random when you look at it, but somehow Smash still prevails in all of this. Like Snake is in Smash and everybody loves him, and it's just like, okay, this is just a part of it. But when other games try to do, other platform fighters, they say, oh, if Smash is getting away with that, people went really hype for Sora and they went really hype for Sephiroth and like Banjo and Kazooie and shit like that, surely we can get away with putting LeBron James in the game because he's the biggest athlete basically,
you know,
in
the
world.
Difference is Smash established itself. Smash 64 had 12 characters in it, and it was all just Nintendo characters. And then Melee was an extension of that, and it was all still just Nintendo characters. And then that was... And then Brawl launched on like one of the biggest systems of all time. The Wii is only outsold, I think, by the PS2.
Yeah.
Maybe the DS, but I think it's just the PS2. The Wii's one of the biggest systems of all time. Smash at this point becomes one of the biggest IPs of all time. Still all Nintendo characters, but it's the third game, and it creates this crazy hype by saying, and guess what? Solid Snake and Sonic is in this.
And,
game.
And
it's like,
you know what? You know how you know how they did it well? Smash Dojo, bro.
Yes, Smash Dojo. Yeah. They built all of this hype into it.
Wait, it was Smash like, Dojo for people who don't know.
So going into Brawl. Yeah, go ahead, Stango. I'll let you talk about it because you brought it up.
Yeah, Smash Dojo was a website that Nintendo hosted that gave you, I don't know if it was on a daily basis or a weekly basis.
It was pretty much daily. It was daily. Yeah, day after school, I would log in.
You got daily updates on what would be in Brawl.
Oh, that's awesome.
Stage, returning characters, and you literally saw like one day when you're coming home from school in the year 2006, 2007, whatever it was, the year coming home from school, you're like, oh my god, Sonic the fucking Hedgehog is in Brawl.
Bro, listen, it was crazy because you'd come home from school every day and they would just show, a lot of days would just be like, the home run bat is going to be in the game again. Yeah. Okay. And then it'd be like, they'd show a new stage and they would do, or there'd be like a mini interview where they'd talk about some mechanics of the game. Like, it was all this hype shit. And then one day, you come home from school, and I remember at this time, like, Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games came out. It was the first time Mario and Sonic were in a game together. And this was before Brawl. And I got really hyped for that. I was like, oh my god, like, do you guys really think Sonic will make it in the Smash? Because they made this game, like, it could happen. One day you come home, and then, I don't know if you guys remember, the Sonic trailer for Brawl is like, I think it's like, they're like sitting there, they're like on a stage, Mario's there or whatever, and then like, you hear something, and then like, you see a blue thing run past the screen, and it's like, what the fuck? And it's like, the way they set it up is so hype, because like, Sonic runs by, and then...
This is when Nintendo had already bought Sega, basically, right? So like Nintendo,
I don't know if they own Sega, but a lot of Sega content was coming out on Nintendo. Look, all the Sonic games, all the Sega stuff got re-released on GameCube.
Yeah,
because
Because I was used to playing, you know, a lot of Sega games that I grew up with, or their IPs anyway, on GameCube. Sonic Adventure 2 Battle is one of my favorite games of all time. I think we've talked about it multiple times now, but I spent a lot of time in Child Garden. In Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, I spent a lot of time in Child Garden. So Sonic, I grew up on Sonic and not Mario. I always say that. Like, I did play Mario as a kid, but it wasn't my game. Like, it wasn't... I didn't go up for Mario when I was younger. I was more of a, you know, side-scrolling Sonic player. And when he came to Brawl, I was really excited. But then I realized that Brawl was just an IQ test, and there was really only one character in the game. And you had to have special rules to make the game fun. Like, you basically had to be like, when you went over people's houses and they challenged you for money or whatever, they'd be like, oh, let's play Brawl for money. You're like, okay, well, first of all, hold on. Who do you play? If they say Meta Knight, you're like, absolutely fucking not. And if they say, like, oh, I play like Zelda or something, you're like, okay, sure, I won't play Meta Knight because I'm not an asshole. Or you could just be, you know, an asshole and actually pick Meta Knight, and they don't realize, because some people aren't as competitive as us. Some people generally don't know about, like, this is the best character and is not close, and anyone else you pick is just inferior in every possible way, and there's no reason you should ever pick anybody else if you want to win specifically.
The other thing that's scary about that, though, is like, because if they pick King Dedede, you don't know if they're a glue eater,
right?
Or they're going to chain grab a glue eater that knows how to play the game,
right? Because you could just get chain grabbed across the stage and be like, all right, well, I guess this guy, he knows enough to do that. Like, I remember I played against the guy who used Snake.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I played against the guy who used Snake, and I was using Meta Knight, and we were playing for like $10. And the match started off, and he dash attacked me and mortar slided, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, this guy, he knows, like, he fucking knows. He's well aware of what's going on. Like, Snake wasn't bad in Brawl either, so the mortar slide was like a little glitch that he had, where you dash attack and you could do like an up smash at the same time. It was really cool, but as soon as I saw him do that in the first interaction, I was like, this guy knows what he's doing to a degree, at least.
What he's doing.
Yeah, I still won, but because Meta Knight is just still like, what are you doing? A lot of these games, man, they come out. I won't lie, I'll be interested at first, because they do get you hype. I feel like we live in a generation where the trailers are better than the actual games a lot of times. Like, multiverses.
That's true for movies. That's true for movies as well.
Yeah, shows. Like, me and Kenny, we watched the multiverses trailer and stuff like that, and we talked about it on the podcast, and we were excited about it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is going to be really cool. Then it comes out, and the game is kind of like stiff. And what always gets me is that when they show the previews and they say, like, not actual gameplay, you know, the final version will be different. It never is. That kind of bugs me too. Like,
it's never different.
I remember saying, like, does this game look a little slow to you? Like, does it look just like a wee bit, like, it's almost in slow motion, like 1.5 speed, like not 1.5, but 0.5 speed or something like that.
Yeah, and then, 0.5. And there's always copers too. There's always copers. Like, obviously this is going to, like, this happened with Guilty Gear or Strive. There's always people that are like, you know, it's not actual footage. Like, the game's going to change before it comes out. It's going to be better. Don't worry. Like, the health bar, like the whole UI for Guilty Gear looked like shit. And then everybody was like, no, don't worry, they're going to fix it. Like, all that stuff's going to get fixed when it comes out. Like, that's not the real health bars. Like, it's not actual footage. And then at some point, people have to stop getting tricked. Like, the game came out, and that was the footage. Like, those were the health bars. I'm no longer, like, that's how the game looked. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm like 10 years in of not buying it. You know what I mean? Like, I've experienced the whole, this is not actual gameplay bullshit.
But multiverses, you know, that game's dead. I can't believe they're trying to bring it back. But all of that aside, that's not why we're here. Stango, let's hear about your run.
Yeah,
because you got first fucking place at Genesis,
the whole thing,
and Nickelodeon All Stars.
I got the medal to prove it, right?
Yeah, let's see it. Let's see this medal. Ooh, look at that.
Damn. Fire medal too.
That's actually really cool looking. If you're on Patreon, if you are seeing this episode on Patreon, because all the videos are on there. Yeah, that is fucking nice looking. It looks like the Gold Ranger from Power Rangers. If you know, if you know anything about that, the Gold Ranger was my favorite, and that shit looks like
nice.
True. Yeah. You know, microphone warning, but this is.
Oh,
that's
wow.
It's hefty. Like,
yeah, no, that's awesome. That's actually very awesome. So, okay, you play what character, and give us a little bit about this game, and like, how do you feel it changed from the first one to the second one? Because I know nothing about the changes from the first one to the second game.
Yeah. I'll try my best to explain it. So as far as how NASB 1 played and functioned, it was very Melee inspired, as Frazier was kind of saying. A lot of these Smash clones normally take a lot of traits from Melee, because even though Ultimate player base wise is pretty much the biggest, I think a lot of the Smash clones, and at least the people that like make these and develop these, come from a background where they're really inspired by Melee. And you pretty much see that in almost every game in terms of how they combo. Like, no one makes clones of Brawl. No one makes clones of Ultimate. Like, these games don't function like that. Their combo systems, their ledge mechanics, the movement abilities and stuff like that, it's all Melee inspired. Yeah.
I'd say the only one that edges a little close to 64 is Slap City. Like, Slap City clearly has 64 inspirations, but other than that, they're all Melee.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, too, because the Melee people are older. So if people who play Melee are engineers now, which is, like, a very big possibility, of course, they're in the generation of people who are developing games and developing projects like this. So that just checks out. Like me and Kenny grew up on Melee as not our first Smash game, because we both played the first one, but, like, Melee is the one when we were teenagers. So, like, mm-hmm. that's our coming of age Smash game. And if now, in our age right now, let's say we chose to become game developers or engineers of any kind, that would be an inspiration for any kind of thing that we made, because it's the one that we played the most. Like, I played Melee more than I played any other Smash game, even still.
Yeah. And that even goes more to show where I know 100% for a fact that some of the developers for NASB 2 were former Project M players.
Makes sense. Project M is a spinoff of what, Smash or Melee. Brawl? Oh, it was a Brawl. Yeah. Okay.
It's a Brawl.
It's a mod of Brawl to make it more like Melee.
I'm going to say Melee or Brawl, not Smash or Brawl.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, so NASB 1, very Melee-like in a way. It has a lot of different mechanics where instead of, you know, fast falling your aerials, which is a, you know, term they call shuffle, it's essentially the way to attack in an aerial way as fast as possible with the least amount of lag. So you're jumping around, attacking, reducing your lag, being really fast, air to ground. They introduced the mechanic where instead of, you know, inputting the system of how Melee does it, you instead just pretty much do an air dodge down while you're attacking. So it's kind of like air dashing, like from, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom or Anime Fighters. But you just do that in the middle of move. So it was a very high APM game.
APM stands for...
actions per minute.
Yep.
So you're pretty much always hitting the dodge button at every moment. And that was actually a bit of a problem for some people because, you know, GameCube controllers, they're not ergonomically the best controllers. So that repetitious action can actually be very harmful.
I still think y'all have weak fingers, man. Everybody crying about the ergonomics of the controller. Y'all gotta fucking drink some milk.
Not kidding, it's fucking caveman hands talking
I'm
about
people. Just saying, doing... man, drink some fucking milk. I got all these people bitching about the GameCube controller and not being ergonomic. Y'all just made words up, acting like you knew what the fuck that word meant.
Not made up.
Y'all just making shit up, acting like you knew what it was. And then now it's a big buzzword. Now everybody needs their ergonomics and all.
Listen, oh my god, he's such a boomer. Listen,
y'all are just getting bitches.
I'm not taking your ergonomic shots.
I'm just saying. We're trying to, and everybody wants an excuse to use the cheat box. Everybody wants an excuse to fucking use their cheating ass cheat box controller.
Are multiple communities trying to use that? I thought it was just Ultimate.
All the communities. It's all over the fighting game.
It started with Melee, Frazier.
Cheaters. Okay. Oh fuck that. Anyway. I say all that to say is drink some fucking milk and eat your Wheaties and use the controller. Stop being a bitch.
I think we can all agree, though, that controllers made 20 years ago are not as good as controllers made now. Like, that is just, you know, they're making them better for our hands. Like, they're just better now. Like, unfortunately, the GameCube controller was made at a time where controllers weren't the best in terms of
literally in 2000, maybe 1999. Like, that's when it was like crafted. Initially.
Yeah, control. Like my Smash Pro controller. Well, not Smash. My Switch Pro controller. Right, that is one of the best controllers to me. Like, I use that controller. I used it to play Monster Hunter.
Good controller.
I used it to play. I actually started playing Smash on it last year. Like, when I was going to AU and playing Smash instead of playing Yu-Gi-Oh every time, I was learning. I was playing against Veda every week, and I would purposely force myself to use the Pro controller because I noticed that the best player in the world, Akola, I was like, what the fuck? He uses a Pro controller to play the game? And then that got me thinking, like, huh, if he grew up on the Pro controller and he's also the best player in the world, that makes me wonder, like, you don't really need a GameCube controller to be the best. Like, you could just use basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
That was something that had to eventually break into the fighting game community. There was a stigma for a long time where people would convince you that you needed an arcade stick to be good. Like, you couldn't possibly.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that propaganda.
And it's just not true. Like, as years went on and people who didn't grow up in the arcade era started to get old enough to be entering the tournaments to become the biggest players, like Sonic Fox, for example, all of a sudden you start to see people that just use an Xbox controller.
Yeah, I'm just using the controller
in the world. Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just what you grow up with and what you're comfortable with.
What you say,
yeah, in addition to that, games got, I guess, a lot more easier to play. They wanted to, like, simplify the game mechanics so that more people will play, so that controllers actually got better than arcade sticks because of that. So, like, simple inputs, like, one motion for, like, a Dragon Punch, for example, is right, down, then down, right, but, like, in some games now, you just press like forward and to press something else. That's it.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that they took the Smash idea. Sakurai, that's how he designed Smash, because he was playing King of Fighters and I think Fatal Fury or whatever. And he realized that the people he was playing against, like, they couldn't do the inputs. Like, he was able to do all the inputs, but he would play against people in these old school fighting
randoms in the arcade hall.
Yeah, and they couldn't do the moves. And so when he designed Smash, he wanted the special moves, the Hadoukens, the Shoryukens, to be more easily accessible. And that's why they're literally forward plus button, down plus button, up plus button, back plus button. Like, it's just direction plus B. It's not do a fucking pretzel motion and then press a button. Like, it's not any of that crazy
my
shit.
Fingers will never forget how to do a Hadouken, a Shoryuken, Tatsumaki. It's because that's just how I grew up, right? I grew up in the 90s, so I grew up playing Street Fighter 2, and I just can do, like, I can do 100 Hadoukens in a row without missing a single one. Like, I remember me and my friends, I would just start trolling them in a match. Like, we'll have a timer off and we'll start throwing Hadoukens and we'll just keep doing it until eventually one of them got too close to the other. I would sit there and do that literally until I hit you with mine, which means that, like, mine keeps inching a little closer to yours. I'm doing the input faster than you, and it's just like, yep, I'm getting closer, and I don't care how long it takes. Eventually, as soon as it hits you, though, then we start fighting again. It's just like toxic bullshit that we did as kids. But I love the fact that Smash did simplify it. Like, Sakurai decided up B, down B, left B, right B. Like, that is enough. Like, that is enough right there, and I am happy to to play it that way instead of having to do the commands, because some of the commands are bad.
Some of them are quarter circle forward. It's like quarter circle forward, half circle back, and then forward. It's like, what?
For some characters, it's a double 360.
Do a 720. So do a full circle. And so you got to do a full circle on your stick twice without your character jumping. And by the way, pressing up jumps. So it's like,
if you do your inputs well enough, you get like the Tony Hawk, like pro skater, like ding, like like the high score ding when you hit the input command correct. Ding.
I hated that shit. Especially, so Soul Calibur was notorious for inputs. Like, I remember playing that game. I used Ivy, and she had two command grabs. One was called, like, Summon Suffering, and you had to do, basically you just had to, like, vomit all over your control stick. You had the seizure on that shit to do this command grab, and it looks crazy if you don't buffer it. Thank God buffering was eventually put into the game, but if you didn't buffer it, it's just her, like, gyrating around. So my opponent, my best friend, could always just, like, see me go. He's like, "You're going for fucking Summon Suffering right now."
And he
just, like, backs away from me.
Something real bad.
You're just sitting there all sly. You're just like, "Yeah, I'm not going, like, for suffering. I'm not doing that." I'm just moving. What are you looking at?
Yeah, like, what are you looking at?
Dude, Soul Calibur and Tekken are made by the same people. And so it's funny because they both have this. But the most premium example is Kazuya. And this is in Smash. So funny. But the Electric Wind Godfist is, you have to press forward. So the way the notation is, right, when you look at the command list, it's an arrow forward and then a star.
Yes.
And then an arrow down forward, and then an arrow forward. And you're like, you look at your controller and you go, "Where's which the star? Button is star?"
I remember,
like,
as a kid, I had no idea.
I'm on PlayStation. They must mean X. That's X.
What button is fucking star? And then who knows how you one day find out that star means pressing nothing?
I don't even know how.
Star means don't press nothing. So you have to press forward, nothing, and then do another input. And then, like, you have to do it perfectly for the move to come out. And it's like,
It's so bad. Honestly, kudos to Smash for making the controls the best for fighting games, because I still don't care for even. So, you know, speaking of controls, because this is actually a big controversial topic now in the fighting game community. But the new Street Fighter came out a couple months ago, and they introduced something called simple controls, which is where you literally can combo with one button. So if I'm playing Ken and I do not know how to do all of the Shoryukens, Tatsumaki, you know, Hadouken commands and stuff, and I don't know how to do his special, which is the same in every game, if I just want to do it really easily, I can put on simple controls and I can hit you once and keep pressing the same button, like square, 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 and it will do a combo on the opponent. Mm-hmm. Like a really, I won't say it's fully optimized, but it's a combo.
It never is.
Yeah, it's not the optimal combo. Like, it's not the absolute best, but you know, beggars can't be choosers. But it is
you can beat your buddy with it. Yes. You can beat your buddy with the combo.
People always cry and complain about that shit. Like, they're in Dragon Ball FighterZ. They're called auto combos. You just press square over and over again, you do a full combo. People always cry about that. I promise you, if you're losing to somebody, it's not because they're auto combo.
Yeah,
like that's never the reason. And if they're simple inputs, like if it's forward plus button for Shoryuken, you're not losing because that person's using simple inputs and you're not, and you're so good because you can do real inputs. If you do real inputs all day but you're still losing, it's because you're bad. Like, that person's better than you. And if you need to start doing simple inputs to step your game. Because at the end of the day, the fact that the person did the Shoryuken easier, like, that's not why they won. They won because they Shoryuken you, because you jumped at a bad time.
Yeah.
And you got fucking
They just have better like, fighting game fundamentals.
Yeah.
That's actually a good point, too, because, like you said, it's not really that the controls are easier for one person and that's why you're losing. That's probably one of them. Like, that can be one, but that is not the reason you're losing. You're losing because this person's spacing better than you. You're losing because this person has better fundamentals in fighting games than you do. You're losing because this person has better meter management than you do. It's not just this guy did a Shoryuken with two buttons and I'm doing it with a fucking quarter circle square.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not it. Like, I'm not bad at Smash Melee because I can't do the commands. I'm bad at Smash Melee because I don't know how to properly space myself and I don't know how to fucking like read what I'm supposed to do here in the certain situations. It's like there's a lot more happening that will make someone beat me. If I had simple controllers, I'm not going to be able to pick up and start beating on Stengo. Like, I'm not going to win a game against Stengo because my Marth can do a sure hop double fair or like whatever it is. That's not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to be able to be like, oh man, like I double fair with Marth off of two buttons as opposed to having to actually do the real command like flawlessly. That's not going to be the reason why I beat him, you know?
But yeah. Apparently two people can beat Stengo.
What do you mean?
It's true. It's a stupid joke. One of the first times Cairo ever came back from Korea, shout out to a true hero, but one of the first times he ever came back and visited America, we were together and we were playing Smash, and it was me and Cairo versus Stengo.
Oh, God, that's how bad it got.
It was a 2v1 in Melee, and we beat him. And yeah. It's just like this, because obviously that's not an accomplishment.
No,
right?
It's not. Because that's not a thing. But it's just not even.
We
it's not
talk
even
about
it right now. It wasn't easy.
We talk about it like it was an accomplishment.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, but you can't beat both of us. And like, we beat you when so it was both wild. Of us. And like, we use it as like a as like, oh yeah, we're the shit. Like 2v1, you can't beat us 1v2.
That
like,
is fucking absurd.
Yeah,
yo, that is so absurd. But yeah, but yeah, simple controls are better.
But yeah, pretty much. Going back to the Nasby discussion, yes. Nasby 1, it's just a faster-paced Melee-inspired game. It functions a little bit differently. It's not really one-to-one, because everything with the Smash clones, they always try to, you know, tweak and minor some things to differentiate themselves from, you know, the pack. Mm-hmm. Nasby 2 comes out after Nasby 1. It does, like, kind of shaping up and become a better game and stuff like that, but, you know, as we kind of said before, the, you know, everyone kind of flew from that nest once they missed their shot in the very beginning. Because, you know, in some ways, people are looking for a new game to play. But also in some ways, people are also looking for a game to be like, oh, like maybe this is an alternative that's like actually legitimate and stuff like that. Because everyone always gives things a try. The one thing that these developers always make a mistake of, they try to make a game that is to like replace or kill Melee. Melee players like to play Melee. Yep. They will never play anything else. They'll play something else for a moment, but they'll always come back to Melee. That's the thing.
They love it. They love Melee.
Yeah, that's the thing that most people...
They had a chance. They had a chance to kill Melee, and that was before Brawl came out.
Yep.
Brawl came out, and then that's when the Melee players decided, okay, this is our game for the rest of time.
They dug in the dirt, and they're never getting out now. So fast forward to Nasby 2. Pretty much the same deal. Melee-like clone. It's slowed down from Nasby 1, where like hit stuns like a lot more like impactful. Like when you get a hit, there's like a big freeze frame of just like boop, doo. You know, and they introduced a new mechanic called the slime meter. You know, Nickelodeon slime. If you guys remember like the game shows and stuff like that, where you get slimed.
I had no idea.
It'd be a bunch of adults in an audience watching kids get slimed.
Yeah, exactly. That is true. So the slime meter is essentially pretty much, you know, like the traditional fighters like super meter. You have three bars. The first bar lets you either EX enhance a move like a smash attack,
right.
an aerial smash attack, a grounded smash attack, or a special move. You can make it stronger, give it different properties, it does a different function, whatever it may be, right? And when you hit a character, you can slime cancel. So if I hit you with just say a move that everyone knows from Smash, Falcon Punch, I Falcon Punch you and I have 1 meter of slime, I can press a button and I can cancel all of my hit lag of me Falcon punching you. And I can like dash behind you and then like do a knee and you fly into my knee and I like kill you off the side.
Oh, wow.
So they have
slime cancel shit is cool.
Yeah, the slime canceling. And then they have, you know, for people who play Dragon Ball Z Fighter, they have Burst.
you're getting fucked up. You're getting comboed. If you have two bars of slime, you can expend those two to pretty much say, get off me. Like, your combo ends. And then 3 meters, you have your super. Spoiler alert, they suck. But you know, it's fun. You know, there's a whole cut scene. Maybe the characters say some shit. It's like a cool thing. Yeah. And it doesn't kill you.
But the optimal way to play the game at this point is to not use your 3 slime meter to do that.
Yeah, to do the super. But as far as NASB 2, I actually really like the game. The biggest problem, once again, that they ran with 1 is that the game is abhorrently riddled with bugs.
Oh, still? Mm.
Every single patch always has a problem, and usually pretty big ones.
Damn.
So before we even get to my Genesis run, the Genesis run
I love how you say that, like it hasn't been 40 minutes, but continue.
As far as like my actual experience, but funnily enough, the Genesis run was very close to not happening at all.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
And that is because, let's just say, I don't know how many patches there has been, but let's just say there's only been 3 patches in the game. Patch 1, 2, and 3. Patch 1, smooth sailing. My character's good. No bugs, no issues. There's other characters, you know, lower tier characters. They have bugs, issues. The game is, you know, a little buggy. Patch 2, they decided to do a bug fix patch. And they actually have a bit of a reputation of doing what is called shadow nerfs, where they actually try to change characters and don't put them in the patch notes.
I hate that.
They've done it a few different times. And guess who got hit with a shadow nerf that they were trying to do?
Granny?
Your main character?
They hit Granny?
So you play Arnold's grandma.
Yes, Grandma Gertie. And if you want an idea of how she plays, think of every single great Smash move, like in all of Smash. And she's that character. She has Donkey Kong up air, Palutena back air, Captain Falcon knee, Captain Falcon nair, Cloud down tilt, Marf F smash, Marf up smash, Sheik down smash, Falcon grab game, ZSS recovery with tethers. She's insane. She's broken.
All that
fuck.
Sounds great. I just have one question. Yeah. You saying that Captain Falcon's nair is better than Fox's nair?
As far as like disembodied, yes. Disembodied from the character, yeah.
Okay.
For sure. But to move on from that, like I said, patch number 2, bug fix patch, they also tried to, you know, nerf Granny in a way, but it was in the effort of actually making the like up B more consistent, but it was meant to nerf it. Because essentially the issue with her up B on patch 1 is that she would throw like a lasso to the ledge. It would, you know, pretty much instantly seek it and grab it. She would reel in and she would have no lag. She could pretty much instantly like act and everything like that. It was insanely broken, horribly difficult to edgeguard her. They tried to make it more consistent for patch 2. Patch 2 comes around, and let me preface this. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating when I say this exact sentence. 100% of the time when she tethered to the ledge, she would get stuck on the ledge. She could not move. You couldn't move her off the ledge.
100% is fucking crazy.
And if you tried, it's not exaggeration. 100% of the time, you up B the ledge, you try to reel in, you will get stuck there. And if they try to hit you to like free you or like, oh, I'm playing this guy, I don't know who he is, I'm going to like beat him up here because he's stuck in a bug. You will get in a glitch state where anyone who's watching this video, perfect visual example, look up Super Smash Bros. Melee Ice Climbers Freeze Glitch.
Yep.
That's exactly what it will look like. You will be stuck frozen in the air. You can't move. They can't stop you from being in this way. And you'll get stuck in the stage. And the game is like pretty much over. It's soft locked.
And so I'm guessing this is how the game was before Genesis.
Before Genesis. And
oh my God.
I saw this on Twitter when it came out. I was at work and I saw this on Twitter. I was just like, oh, that's probably... When I first saw it, my initial impression was like, oh, it's probably like... There needs to be this weird hyper-specific thing that happens and it will never happen in an actual bracket. So I went in the training mode while I was, you know, chilling at work and I upbeat and I instantly got stuck. And then I had someone playtest with me and attack me and I instantly got stuck inside of the stage. And I was like, oh. So after a few hours of that, I kind of deliberated. I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to frustrate myself and try to learn a character because for me in NASB 2, Grandma Gertie, she's insanely broken. I play top tiers, period. But she's also the most fun character for me. I played pretty much everyone, and she's like the only character I actually enjoy playing. Like, she plays my playstyle. She's very grab oriented. I'm a Marth main in Melee. She's very combo oriented. I'm a PM Donkey Kong player. Like, she's everything that I want in a character: grab, combo, kill, gimp. You know,
she does it all.
Yeah.
Does she have a projectile?
I,
Yeah, she pretty much has like peach turnips where she just like pulls a random item.
It's insane.
She's Frasier. I'll show you one day. Like, I'll show you practice mode. Yes, like, you'll just, I'll just show you everything. Like, yeah, it, she's insane.
Because you've been telling me the gospel for a while now, and I trust you just like you trust me in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
You've been preaching the gospel. You're like, people just aren't woke. They just aren't woke.
People have no idea. People they're so far beyond on it. It's yeah. But anyway, so I was just like, oh, well, I'm not going to frustrate myself because, one, I'm not practicing like a character before like the biggest like offline tournament. That's because of the prize pool and stuff like that. And two, I don't like any of the other characters anyway. So what I'm going to do, I'm not going to play. And I was slated to be the second seed of the tournament. And, you know, I kind of told the TOs, not like in a, you know, pull their, you know, arm in a certain direction. I'm like, listen, I know you guys are trying to figure out what you're going to do about this patch because other characters got fucked over too. But my character, literally, there was even discussion about banning my character because it would like stall up brackets if you tried to play her.
Yeah.
Because like it would like soft lock a match. So I was like, listen, I know you guys are trying to figure it out. I'm just letting you know right now, if we're on this patch, I'm just simply not playing. And I'm not saying that to be like ignorant or anything. It's just like, there's no way that I'll have enjoyment by playing. Yeah.
Like, you're not going to enter and play a character. You don't like, you're not going to learn a new character. You're not going to like, oh, I'm going to learn how to play fucking Raphael. Yeah. Like, you're just not playing.
Also, to be fair, right, though, you're flying across the country to play in Genesis 2, right? Like, this is in California?
Yes, this is in California.
Yeah, we live in the Philadelphia area. We live in Pennsylvania. So this is literally across the country, as almost as across as you can go.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, I had other things that I was doing there. Like, I was playing in Melee singles and doubles. So, yes, like, my weekend wasn't going to be completely ruined if this was the outcome of it.
Right, right. There's still stuff to do.
But, like, going into this tournament, I was just like, I feel very prepared. I know who's going here. I'm going to win. Like, I know for 100%. Because as far as, like, the tournament goes, like, to give context, the largest tournament, Slimebox, which is hosted by one of the biggest Melee players, Hungrybox, he essentially hosts like random tournaments for whatever. He was like promoting a lot of Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl, NASB 2. So Slimebox 2, because he had two of them, like 3K prize pool, 5K prize pool, you know, throws a lot of money from the game developers and stuff like that. I got second at the last one, and I beat everyone's ass like easily. I ran in the Plup. And he was playing a character for that one where we both agreed was like easily the best character in the game. And he waxed my shit. He 6-0'd me. It was really bad.
Oh, you were in Winterside Grand Finals.
I was in Winterside because he actually got upset like in pools and he won like 18 sets in a row to make it to grands. Yeah, no, he.
But
he
got second and still won some money.
Yeah, I won some money. So to fast forward to that, like, I pretty much beaten a lot of the good players that tournament. And like, pretty much from where I stood right there and my, you know, mental perception of where I stand in the ranks, I was just like, I'll win this tournament 100%. So that was disappointing coming to patch number two. That was, you know, mess my day up. And essentially what came of that is that they were like, okay, what's going to happen is we're going to play on patch number three, and patch number three has Mr. Krabs as the new character. Mr. Krabs will be banned, but patch number three doesn't come out until like a day or two before Genesis like actually begins.
Oh, wow.
So what's going to happen is, remember how I told you, every single patch has problems.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It was, the choice was patch number two. We know what's already fucked up.
Right.
So we operate on that.
The devil you know or the devil you don't know.
Yes. Patch number three is, you know, we fix a debilitating bug to one character of someone who's going there. And I don't think that was their main decision. I think it was just like, I think they think that's the right thing to do anyway. But they were like, oh, patch number three. Who the fuck knows
what's going to happen with patch number three?
Yeah. Because everyone knew it in the community. Everyone knew is like, okay, we know all these patches are always like botched. So fast forward to that, patch number three, pretty much no issues at all. Like,
that's surprising considering their track record.
Yeah. Like, as far as I understand, like, at least the characters that, you know, if I'm being, you know, real, matter.
Playable characters,
Real characters, like, there wasn't really that big of a problem. So, then to talk about my run at Genesis. Early rounds, I fought a guy named Zane. That was funny.
Yeah, but not Zane.
Literally wasn't actually Zane.
The best Melee player in the world is Zane currently. And that's why it's wild.
When I initially saw it on the bracket, I was like, no. And I looked around, I was like, because I know Zane personally. No? I was looking around, I was like, okay, I don't see him here. So I don't think this is actually Zane, but it was just funny to see.
play through that bracket, and then my arduous journey to top eight winners finals. Okay. So when I tell you that I won three game five sets in a row.
Oh my God.
To make it to top eight winner side winners finals. Okay. My first set, I pretty much played against a very campy guy. He was just running away, throwing projectiles and stuff like that. And I was being a bit of a scrub and getting frustrated in the beginning.
Yep.
I locked in when I was down like 0-2 or something, or like, I think it was 2-1. Like we were 1-1 and then he went up 1-2-1.
Yeah. So you're on elimination at this point.
Yep. Then I play against Sky J. Frazier actually probably knows this guy, Sky J.
From Smash Ultimate. Yeah. Plays Incineroar. He's
the
actually
best Incineroar, right?
One of the best players in the game right now, too. He's beat Spargo. He's beat Leo. I think he almost beat Sonics. Like, he's with Incineroar, mind you. Like, he's doing some shit that people are like, what the fuck? Like, how is this a thing? So, Sky J, he's top 25, I think, right now in the world, like of all Smash Ultimate players.
He's cracked. Sky J is also a cool dude.
I don't know if he played that game, but it kind of makes sense. It has his energy. Like, the energy
he's very good at that game as well.
Yeah, it has that like big energy, you know?
So here's what happens with Sky J. Pretty much, we get to a circumstance where he's up 2-1. We start our initial game. And to give more context to this, this was a problem on patches 2 and 1. Offline playing with different controller types. So I'm playing on GameCube controller. Other people are playing on USB-based controllers like Xbox,
sure,
Pro controllers,
yep,
what have you, right? When you plug Xbox or Pro controller in, when there's a GameCube controller plugged in, they don't play nice with each other. And it usually requires a restart of the game every single time that these two meet.
Wow.
If it's like GameCube, usually not a problem. GameCube Pro controller Xbox, blah, 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 blah. Mm-mm.
Wow.
So what had happened is that, you know, we were initially going through the rounds of, you know, like butt warming, being like, okay, controllers are fine. Like, we don't need a restart because, like, you know, they were running behind on stream and stuff like that. So they were like, if we don't have to restart, we would really prefer not to.
Right.
And like, we button tested, the controllers worked. And the bug that would happen, to make it clear, usually the GameCube controller person, lucky me, right? Their controller essentially would just stop inputting, like as if you unplugged it. Like entirely. So down 2-1 to Sky J. We go in the very beginning of a match.
Oh,
and pretty
God.
Much in the very first 5 seconds, I'm like dash dancing, and then I stop moving and I'm like looking at my controller. Sky J sees me. He's a
gentleman.
Honor roll competitor.
Yes, he was for sure.
Yeah. So he's just like, he waves down the, you know, stream guy. He's like, what happened? I'm just like, yeah, he's like 0%, I'm at 90%, and like my controller just turned off. And like they're just like, okay, we're just gonna restart the game entirely because, like, you know, we don't really know when this started. Cause I was just like, yeah, I kind of felt it earlier, but I thought maybe I was just fucking up.
Right.
But then my controller completely like went kaput.
Yeah. It's very ambiguous when it's like when it's happening and you're playing, because you could be like, well, maybe I just fucked up.
I could be in hit stun and I could think I'm still like, he could be doing a combo that I could escape out of, but maybe my controller wasn't inputting.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that was just a true combo. But maybe
the game's
wasn't.
Young enough where you don't know for sure. Like, you don't know every little detail about what's tight, you know, how tight of a window things are. Like, and right now, for example, Smash Ultimate has been out for over 5 years. And it's one of those games where people know what's true and what's not true now. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
people know. Like, if something weird happened, they'd be like, that's not true. He could have air dodged, he could have DI'd, he could have did whatever, smash DI, whatever. But your game is so new. And you're on a new patch on top of that, so you might be like, oh, maybe this is just fucking true. He just hit me with that.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we restart the game, and this actually resonated with me instantly after I won this set. I heard Frazier's voice in my mind because of this situation. You always need luck to win.
Yes.
And I don't ever want to take a victory off of, like, you know, him getting iced out and stuff like that, because we have to restart a game when he's already in like an advantageous position. But I thought to myself, I was just like, I really want to win this tournament. And like, even though I don't believe in like divine intervention and stuff like that, I think this happened for a reason. I was getting my ass beat.
Can't wait till we talk about Gary's run at RBET this past weekend. You're talking about divine intervention.
Yes, I got my ass beat in those first like 10 seconds of the match, and I just got a break.
I four stocked them literally that game. Damn. On the
reboot. Oh my god.
And I could tell you, and this is what me and Fraser talked about, like a different episode of Smash. Like when people are like tilted or they're exuberating like energy outward, that's like it's like weakness, like they're angry and they're frustrated. I'm like, I'm gonna push harder now. Yeah. Like I'm gonna make you crack.
Yeah.
And that's what happened, you know, game five as well. Like I ended with a three stock. Like he got beat down bad. Next game after that. Thunder's Reign, the greatest. I know
him. He's from the first one. He used to play one of the Ninja Turtles.
Yes, but he also has a very storied name in Project M. The greatest Donkey Kong player in the history of the game.
You're set with him at the PM Theater, right? You're set with him at the PM Theater was so fucking crazy.
Yeah, I went down 0-2 against him at the PM Summit, and this was before I made the full switch to Donkey Kong, but like the Donkey Kong was still like practice and like being prepared. I did the DK Ditto and I beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
I beat the fuck out of him. I can't believe you beat him with Ditto. And then game four, he beat me, but you know, maybe if I started DK the whole time, who knows what would happen. But anyway, a very storied player in Project M, definitely one of the best of all time in that game, 100%. And also just good at like the Smash Lite games, like Thunder's Reign, Thomas. He is immensely good at these platform fighter games. He's always good. He actually top 8 at Rivals 2. He got like 4th or something at Genesis. Hey.
Yeah, that's like Riddles. He's like that. He plays multiple games at the same venue, and he'll top 8 both. He's top 8 at a super major for Smash Ultimate with Kazuya, and then also was playing Street Fighter at the same venue and got top 8 in that game as well. And people were like, how the fuck is he doing that? And there's all these like theories. I like what Tweak says about it on his podcast, Tweak Talks. He said that because he was in loser's bracket in both, he kind of like just said, fuck it, I don't really care as much anymore because I've already lost. So now I'm just letting myself play. And when you're playing like that, sometimes that can just be a freeing feeling for your nerves. Because when you're playing in winners, right, when you haven't lost in a tournament yet, you're just kind of like waiting for that to happen. Because in most games, you're just like, yeah, at some point I am going to lose a round, especially when it comes to card games. But like even in fighting games, you're like, at some point I'm going to come across, because you know your bracket in fighting games too. You see your bracket a lot of these games. And it's like, yeah, when I get to this person, this is a matchup where I'm supposed to lose. But then he'll get to that character like, oh, this is my bad matchup. This is where they have me slated to lose. But because he's playing Street Fighter and he just came from a Street Fighter match, he's like, well, I don't really fucking care if I do bad in Smash. And that takes off like, and then he just plays phenomenal in this bad matchup and wins. And people are like, how the fuck is Riddles playing multiple games right now, but also beating his worst matchup? Like he beat Tweak so bad this one tournament. Like oh my God, it was bad. It was like he three-stocked him in the last game. Tweak tilted, as Tweak normally does when he gets like really fucked up. He beat Tweak so bad. The last time they played, Tweak 3-0'd him and won the games with 3-stock. This time, Riddles completely destroyed him. But it was the same venue where he was playing Street Fighter and Smash. And they were like, how was he able to do that when we figured he needed to be at his A game to ever beat Tweak? And he ends up beating Tweak when he's technically not at his A game, because he is using two different controllers and doing two different games, two different mindsets. But because he's doing that, the theory was like, he is only halfway there, and so his nerves aren't all like, oh my God, like this is what I came here for. You know what I mean? Like, I came for it for this one tournament, and I have to do well at this one event, and there's this pressure, and this is my bad match. He's like, fuck it. You're just another guy.
I'm here. All my love about the Smash community is, I don't really see it happening the other way, but there's a lot of Smash players that have been doing really well in other regular fighting games, so to speak. And I haven't really seen many people come from the regular fighting games over to Smash and do well. Not that they've tried, because I don't even really think a lot of them have tried. But the point is, they're always so surprised. Like, Leffen won Guilty Gear last year at EVO. Like, Leffen won Guilty Gear EVO last year.
Yep.
And there's so many people that are like, how is that even fucking possible? But it's just fucking hype. There's a lot of Smash players that are good.
Yeah. They go into other fighting games and they actually do perform well. And that, because
people
does
talk
not
shit
happen.
Like they can't. Yeah, people talk shit like they can't do it. And they're like, hold on, yeah, we can. Like,
And on top of that, like, Leffen's also really good at Dragon Ball FighterZ. Like,
I mean, listen, I don't think they want the discussion from me where, you know, if I'm being honest, I think it's harder one way and not, I think it's hardest one way and not the other.
Yeah, I think that is kind of what we're alluding to as well without blatantly saying it. But I think that because Smash does get shit on a lot too in the fighting game community, I found out. I didn't know this because I'm not part of the fighting game community. I was an honorary guest while I was dating someone from the fighting game community. And when I found out that they didn't consider Smash to even be part of the FGC, I was surprised. I was like, how come you guys don't talk about Smash? They're like, oh, it's not part of, like, Street Fighter, Soul Calibur, Tekken, Guilty Gear, King of Fighters. Like, they named all of these games, Mortal Kombat, and like Smash was just considered something else that wasn't part of the FGC. And I was like, but yeah, it's a fighting game, cringe. Though. It is real cringe. And me as a Yu-Gi-Oh player coming from the outside and entering into the FJC just as a guest, I was like, I don't get why all of these events have 17 fighting games. And you mean to tell me there's no station for Smash? Because I would go with my boyfriend at the time to, like, whatever, Winter Brawl or whatever.
Summer Jam, Winter Brawl,
whatever events were in the area, in Jersey and Philly or whatever. I would go to these events and I'll be like, oh man, I can actually do something here because I play Smash. And it was like, oh, there's no Smash here. Like if you don't play one of these other games, like, Smash is not here. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. I felt that Smash should be here because it's a fighting game. He's like, no, it's not part of the fighting game
community. Not only is it a fighting game, it is the biggest fighting game.
Yes.
Y'all know.
It is the biggest one. Like, Smash Ultimate is the biggest fighting game ever. Like, it is still the biggest fighting game ever. So you can say what you want.
You know what it is, though? It's because, and this episode's all over the place, but it's because
I'm their podcast.
It's because Smash is younger. It's when fighting games, when, like, the initial old guard of, like, the FGC was,
I can see that.
They were all arcade heads, and they would go down to the arcade,
yeah,
and they would be playing these arcade games on these arcade cabinets. Same reason why, for a long time, people believed you needed to use an arcade stick to be good. And if you used an Xbox or a PlayStation controller, you were a scrub.
Yeah.
It's that same mentality. Is they grew up and there were a bunch of old heads. And then so when new people would come into the scene, you look to your elders and they kind of teach down. And essentially, Smash was seen as, like, this kid's game. It was played on GameCube controllers, and people were, their moms were taking them to tournament. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like, there's this idea of, like, the Smash MILFs, because, like, a bunch of these kids would be at these tournaments with their moms and shit. And but basically, it's just like a bunch of old heads were like, that's a kid's game. We're playing a real game. We're playing Street Fighter. And then little did they know, Smash kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the kids grew up. They became old men themselves. And Smash stuck around. A game from 2001 is still one of the biggest games in the world. It's, yes, outlived almost all of its peers.
Yeah.
And it's still here, but the stigma, there's still, like, an old stigma that lasts. It's like racism in America, you know. There's this old stigma that lasts.
Listen, that people are just like, Smash ain't part of us. You guys need to be on the Patreon, because the face that Kenny made while he did that as well was just like, that was perfection.
But that's, man, what it is. It really is just, and I also think it's a little bit of hate and jealousy, because, like, Smash is, like, the best-selling fighting game.
Yeah, I do think that there's some of that. It is different.
I'm saying this as a huge fighting game guy. I love Street Fighter. Kenny, I love fucking Dragon Ball FighterZ, Tekken. Like, I play all of them.
Yeah, you're a big fighting game player. You are technically part of FJC just because of the fact that you do play almost every fighting game that has come out in the last, like, several years. Like, you've played most of the fighting games that have come out. Like,
I went to KOF. I went to Evo for KOF 13 and Street Fighter 4.
Yeah.
Smash was in Evo.
You went alone too, right?
Alone. None of my friends came. I went by myself to Vegas to play KOF 13 and Street Fighter 4 at Evo 2012.
I mean,
so, like, I'm FGC.
Yeah,
but, like, y'all need to stop. Smash is a fighting game, and it's one of the best ones.
I still get mad that Smash, and this is probably not for any, like, weird reason other than Nintendo, but I just hate it when I see the Evo lineup announced every year and then Smash is not part of it. That shit grinds my gears. Yeah. As a person who just loves Smash, and again, I'm not a part of the FJC or anything like that, but I love Smash so much. And every year when they announce, like, the new games or whatever, or not the new game, but the list of games that are going to be at Evo, and Smash just isn't one of them, I get annoyed, because I'm like, this is the biggest stage for fighting games every year. And if everything was just allowed to go based on, like, you know, what is the most popular, which I think is what it should always be based on, honestly, like, give people what they want, as what I'm saying, like, a democracy. People want Smash. Like, that's not a hot take. It's like, Smash is the most, if you look at the streams, like, when Smash is being played, and this is grand finals of a fucking Smash tournament, look at the fucking number of streams on those tournaments. It's insane. The amount of revenue that, like, Beyond the Summit was bringing in when they did their summit tournaments. Leo won $50,000 for first place, which means second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, they also got paid. Which means the prize pool was probably over 100K. It first got 50K, okay, for an event. That just tells you everything you need to know. Like, this is a very, very big IP. It doesn't need me to tell you that. And it's no reason it shouldn't be at Evo every single year. I think there should be a Smash game, if not multiple Smash games at Evo.
Yeah. I understand, even though I personally think they're both big enough for them both to be there, I understand there's limited slots and you want to show shine to multiple games. So I get if you can't have both Smash games, but one of them should be there.
Every year, bro. every single year Smash would be at Evo. I don't care, I mean at one point they were swapping.
They were doing four and melee.
Yeah. Like, I think that you should be able to do both. Even if it has to come out in the morning. Even if I have to wake up at fucking 9 a.m. to watch Smash Ultimate Grand Finals be played because it's like not considered the newer game. Like, you know, a year that Street Fighter came out, sure, make Street Fighter the nighttime. Because that's that block that's going to get the most impressions. That's where most eyes are going to be on it, that nighttime block. You can give it to Street Fighter. I don't care. I just think that Smash has built the respect to be there every year at what's considered the biggest fighting game tournament of the year. It's just no fucking way. Because,
you know, if we're being honest, as far as like, overall IPs, yes, like you have like Street Fighter and Tekken, they're very long-standing IPs and stuff like that. Combat. But like fighting game fans, they're ravenous, but there's not you can't compare it to a ravenous Smash fan when it comes to a new Smash game.
Yeah.
Because the internet,
you're just not dealing with competitive players, you're dealing with like casuals. And guess what? It's the sad truth. Casuals don't play fighting games.
Yep.
They literally do not. And that's the biggest reason why fighting games in general have always had a struggle of growth, because they're very hard for casuals to, you know, get their footing into it.
Who are the ones
that
do play
sink or swim?
Yeah, because the ones that do play, like Mortal Kombat does very well, but Mortal Kombat Mortal Kombat has this very widespread appeal because of how gory it is. Like, it has this niche that people love, and so Mortal Kombat is selling really well because like it fills this certain niche, and so even casuals like Mortal Kombat, because who doesn't like watching a guy get his body ripped in half from the nuts up, you know? Like,
yeah.
That are a lot of naked girls. Yeah, it checks out.
But so
let's go back to you, Nick. Let's go back to Nazi, because we still got to get to Gary.
Yeah.
But pretty much from there, Thunder's Reign, awesome Smash, like just Smash player, awesome Smash player in total. We went game five, down 0-2, beating my ass. I just lock in. I lock in, I hit the reverse sweep, and the reverse sweep is dominating. It is very daunting.
I love it. You go down 0-2 like two games, like multiple times in this tournament, and then you lock in and then you fucking dominate on the comeback. I love
it. Yeah, I'll tell you right now, when I won that set.
You just tapped into your MK Leo.
Yes, when I won that set, I knew I was going to win the tournament. Because that was the person that I knew would be in grand finals with me. And when I won that convincingly, I was like, okay, I figured out a lot of things. And like, my character's a lot better than his. So it only gets worse from here. Like, now that I figured out things, now I'm going to optimize things and I'm going to be more efficient with, you know, the adaptations that I'm making. Winner's finals comes around. I hear from my girlfriend, Shannon, because she was pretty much being, you know, very, very supportive. She likes to call herself my cheerleader, get me water, making sure I'm all right, pretty much waiting on me hand and foot. Like, she was fully being my rock that weekend, so I really appreciate her and love her for that. She overheard my winner's finals opponent, Troco, saying, damn, bro, I'm nervous about fighting Stango.
I'm nervous about
fighting Stango, because Troco, he was being a little self-deprecating, and he was saying the better Danny Phantom Psyche, he's just another Danny Phantom player in the community, I'm up 2-0 lifetime on Psyche in a pretty convincing fashion, and Psyche is generally considered to be the better of the Danny Phantom players. And Grandma Gertie versus Danny Phantom, it's pretty much just like Jigglypuff versus Fox. Like, Fox will beat the fucking brakes off of Jigglypuff if, like, he's on a roll. And it's kind of easy to be on a roll because you're not as vulnerable as Fox is. Like, you can't just get too touched and the rest and die. Like, you're pretty much fighting, like, Fox killing power, but I'm, like, Ganondorf and Bowser. Like, you can't kill me like that. So, 3-0. Clapped it up. Yeah, it was bad. Grandma Gertie versus Danny, it's not an easy matchup. And then Thunder's Reign, the guy I knew would be in grand finals, comes back.
If you said, who does Thunder's play?
He plays April O'Neil.
Okay.
Who's that? The reporter girl from Teenage Mutant Turtles, the redhead.
She the one with the camera?
Yep, one with the camera.
Oh, she was in the first one.
She was broken in the first one. She's severely different. She's still very good, but she, like, if you were to compare one to one, it's like night and day. I would say almost even. It's like Brawl Meta Knight to, like, Ultimate Meta Knight. Ultimate Meta Knight's like pretty good, right? Like, yeah, he has some things.
Yeah.
Like, he can wobble, he can wall of pain you off to the side, blast zone, or off the top and kill
but
you.
No one would even compare him to Brawl. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I follow. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's night and day.
Yeah. But yeah,
Grand Finals, the adaptations, like I said, more deadly, more efficient, and it just got the gap in terms of like my comfortability just got further and further for him. And I just took it home really clean.
You don't have to say, but I'm just curious, do you guys win money too?
Yes. Okay. Yes, 100%. The prize pool for, you know, just paying to enter, and the you know, developers, they did a 5k pop bonus. So
oh my god,
some mum.
That is very good. Congratulations.
Yes. Overall closing notes of the tournament.
Just real quick, I want to just say Stango's mom, my aunt, she fucking she texts like random, like it's so she just texted me. Now I'm on her phone plan, so every month I send her $50 for the phone bill, for my portion of the phone bill, right? So I get a text message from his mom, and I kind of just roll my eyes because I'm like, god damn it, I guess I forgot to give her the money. I gotta Venmo her the money, right? But then I open the text message, and it's her just like popping off like 13 text messages talking about how Stango, she was like, did you know Stango won this tournament? He went da-da-da, and he was in here, and he won. And so she's just like popping off in my text, just talking about Stango winning, just like super fanning for her son, which she should. But it was just like really cool and cute because she was popping the fuck off that Stango won. It was really cool.
it was a long journey when I was younger, because you know, as every adult, when their kid is like doing competitive gaming and stuff like that, especially like back in the day, like I would say like 6-7 years ago and stuff like that, before like esports became as big of a mainstream thing where like even like old boomers kind of know about it. You know, my mom kind of saw the activities that I was doing, you know, staying up all night, practicing games, traveling to tournaments with grown men that she doesn't know at all. she was very skeptical. Then I started bringing home money. Then I had a sponsor jersey. Then I had a website saying I was 65th best in the world out of, you know, however many people, then 35th best, et cetera, traveling to California, blah, blah, blah. It all changed when those things kind of came around. So, you know, she's always been a really big supporter, but, you know, reasonably skeptical at the very start for sure. So closing notes for the tournament overall, this tournament was very special to me in my mind, because Genesis was actually pretty much the tournament series that like put me on the map in terms of like the you know, in the sphere of like Melee Smash players and stuff like that. Genesis was actually my breakout tournament in my Melee career. Genesis 7, I want to say it was, in 2019. I played
Mango in that tournament. Yeah,
I beat 5 top 100 players in a single bracket, and that was unheard of at the time of being an unranked player doing that. And I went game 5 with Mango, which is one of the greatest, absolute greatest Melee players of all time, hands down.
Pretty is that much set online? Like, is that
it's watchable? On YouTube.
It is on YouTube.
I know I've watched it before. I've definitely seen it, but I just want people listening to the podcast, if you wanted to see Stango's skill level and everything versus one of the absolute best of all time in Melee.
I want to clarify that, not that any of these people watch this podcast, but my younger brother goes to school, and he talks about my cousin just won Genesis and Nick All-Star Brawl, and he's telling his friends about it, right? And so his friends are like, holy shit. And they end up going, they watch the YouTube video, they see you at Genesis, and they're like, oh my god, like, that's your cousin. But I want to clarify for everybody. Everybody here knows this, but I just want to say it. Maybe I can get Jaden to send it to his friends. Stango did not get his name from Mango. It is just his name. Stango's name is Stango.
It's literally...
There's so many people that are like, did so he get his name from Mango? It's like, no. That's literally his last name. Like, he didn't. Yeah. And what does that even mean? Like, why would Stango come? Like, I get that it rhymes, but what does the word Stango mean? Like, how could that be from Mango? Like, what are you talking about?
It's literally just his last name.
Yeah, no, that's always great. You always see those YouTube comments. Anywhere that I pop up, it's always like in Twitch chat. Twitch chat's like infamous for just like Stango, LOL, Mango imitator or something. And I was just like, oh, God.
You were brain dead.
I was just like, the thinking is not, it doesn't go beyond the first layer for some people.
Not at all.
Nope. But overall, closing notes, the tournament was very special to me due to that reason. You know, Genesis was my like actual, you know, breakout tournament, my homecoming to pretty much becoming like a professional player, high level echelon player. And in my career, like, even though NASB 2 is overall like a, like, weaker scene than Melee, weaker scene than PM and stuff like that. I had multiple game 5 sets. It was not easy to get to the finish line this tournament. Everyone was so challenging, and I was very happy about that, because every experience before them was like generally pretty easy, like winning online tournaments or placing high and stuff like that. It just felt very rewarding, because throughout my career in Smash,
in just like competitive gaming, I've never really been able to obtain a first at like something really, really important. Mm. And like have that title, like, you know, wrapped around my waist and stuff like that. So it felt very like,
I mean, you did it. There was over 200 people, right?
Yeah, it was like a 170 or something like that.
So close to 200 people, and all the best players, like, to be clear, I know you said, you know, weaker than PM or weaker than Melee overall, the scene, it is a smaller scene, but at the end of the day, all the best players that play this game are top level players from all these other scenes. Like, all of the Smashlight games, they get a culmination of the other, like, Thunder's Reign, as you said, is one of the best PM players, period. And PM has a strong scene.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the main thing of it, is that, like, you know, that was the first initial thought that came to my mind. I was like, oh man, like, this is wouldn't even really mean anything, because it's like, I'm like playing somewhere soft. But I took solace in the achievement that was like, I mean, just literally look at my bracket. Like, it was not a breeze to get there. And it took a lot of mental determination, because I was down and out several different times all throughout the goddamn weekend. And you know, I got emotional and stuff like that, because it felt like in a way where I'm still going to play things and stuff like that, but you know, if things ended here, that was like kind of my swan song. Like, I was very like, to do it at Genesis of all places, where like I can finally achieve like a meaningful victory for me, where like I have a first to my name. I'm a Genesis champion. This fucking medal is fucking godlike, bro.
The hell yeah, you're fucking Genesis.
There's not many people in the Smash space at all, because that's really what Genesis is overall as a tournament. There's other things, like, you know, there's Guilty Gear and whatever, but in the Smash space, there's only so many people in life that can call themselves a champion of Genesis.
Yeah, and only like, 10 Genesises.
Yeah, so that is what I really took to heart at the tournament, and it was a very blessed experience. I had a lot of fun. And, you know, that's it.
Yeah. All right. It's very interesting that you said all that, Snaggle, about your, like, you know, how you felt about that tournament. Because that was my exact same feeling for my Yu-Gi-Oh! Run.
I was thinking something similar, in that, like, it's similar to Edison format, right? Like, yeah, Edison format's not as big as modern format, but it still takes a very high caliber level of skill. So, like, you can't just win by being bad. You know what I mean? Like, it still matters 100%. To win. For sure. So,
Gary's bracket was crazy too. Oh yeah, Gary.
And the transition. Yeah, let's talk the big OG.
Let's talk about
the G-Man.
RBET this past weekend. Gary took it home. Brought it home for the house.
You guys all entered, right? Stango, did you enter?
Ribbit? I did. I got O2 creamed. You know, these online tournaments, they're really cursed for me. I'm looking to get a run one day. A tournament one day.
Stango, we would talk nice. About that, but I have an idea now. Considering everything, I have an idea that we can talk about off camera.
Yes, we need to cook in the lab.
So we will definitely cook, because now we got a taste. The house has got a taste, and I just feel like, you know, there might be more taste.
Now, yes, but you guys both have wins, not as big as Ribbit, but you both have wins too, though, right? Like at Peak of the Beak or something, like, right?
I've topped several tournaments. I haven't won one of the Edison tournaments, but I've topped a bunch of them.
I thought you won one. I thought you won like a Peak of the Beak or something like that.
No. I don't know if any. Who has won? Because not even Cairo. Even Cairo, yeah. I think he's gotten a couple seconds.
Hasn't got one. I think Gary literally, so funny for Gary, because I think overall with Gary's journey, like, you know, me and Gary like started playing Gary started playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Again. I started my Yu-Gi-Oh! Journey the pandemic. And like, you know, we pretty much started out as two little fledglings playing GOAT format and stuff like that. Like being scrubs, you know, pro setting heavy and getting absolutely creamed for doing it and stuff like that. Like we were just all over the place. And like over time, what really kind of changed, at least from my perspective, and I find it so awesome because it really like empowers me to like want to strive to get better and everything like that. Like I think there was a point, especially when I was like practicing out with Frazier, recording a lot of content, just getting really into Edison and stuff like that. I think like when me and Gary, we kind of started at the same place. We started a race and I started to pull ahead.
Oh yes,
and
you did.
now Gary's a champion. Gary got a win, baby. He's a winner.
And the premier Edison tournament.
Before that, too, Gary topped two online tournaments as well. So that is also something, because it's kind of crazy. It just came out of nowhere. Like, one day Gary was like, all right, I'm going to play Valuetar, bro, because this is what is now basically perceived as the best deck. This is last year, towards the end of last year. But he switched to Valuetar from Black Wings. At one point, he was on Hero Frogs. And he's been switching around to figure out whatever the best deck is. And he landed on Valuetar, got his first top, then got a second top, like, within a month, I want to say. Like, they were very close to each other. Right, Gary?
Yeah, they were very, very close to each other.
And I was like, oh, you're doing that thing that people do where they get their first top and then, like, there's, like, this mental fortress that just gets destroyed. Because I feel like a lot of times topping is a mental thing. Obviously, yes, technical skill and deck building goes into it. But I think the other part that goes into it is your mental belief that you can do it. And I remember distinctly being a younger player who did not top a major event. I felt like looking up at this mountain, like Mount Everest, like, how do I scale this shit? It seems so ridiculous when you haven't done it a single time. But then after you scale the mountain, you're like, oh, that's how you do it. And, you know, people who do that shit for a living, they kind of remember, like, the paths. They know, like, oh, this is a pitfall. Don't put your foot there. Do this, do that. And they kind of have, like, this experience of how to do it. And I feel like that's the same thing with topping. But you can speak more to that, Gary. So you've been playing Valuetar for a good minute now.
Yeah, so in regards to, like, the house, like, the first person from the house to actually win the event, it's so crazy to me. Like, I never imagined it would be me, ever. Like, ever. I thought it would be maybe Stango, because he was, like, pulling ahead of me at that time. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Frazier, because, you know, Frazier's, like, a very accomplished duelist. Like, he teaches all of us, like, at every single point. I thought it would be Kyro, because he was playing
the hottest player in 2023.
Literally,
oh, yeah, he's the man. He was definitely, as I feel like, even people outside of our play group, they, like, saw Kyro. They're like, oh, Kyro's gonna win, like, the next event any day now.
Anytime.
He's the next one due.
It's still coming. That shit is
it's still coming. 100%.
I still believe, like, Kyro's, like, if not the best or the second best, like, player of 2023 in Edison.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. 100%, he's in the conversation. Just the sheer number of tops that he had in that year was fucking insane.
Oh, man, this is awesome. You guys probably don't know this, all you Edison heads. You probably don't know this, because you're very familiar with a true hero, right? But OG's name might be less familiar with it, but you're becoming more familiar because he's got to win. But let me tell you something. Kyro and Gary, a true hero and OG.
Oh my God.
Are bitter fucking enemies.
My God.
They are rivals to the end.
I know
they
I was
viewed to no
they
fucking end.
Are the pettiest
I was shaping
two fucking
it up that
rivals.
Me and Gary were like a rivalry, like kind of starting fledgling Yu-Gi-Oh, but it's nothing in comparison to Gary and Kyro.
These two? And they talk about, they'll be talking shit about, like, them playing Tenkaichi 3 from 30 years ago. Like,
yes,
they're like,
they
I'll bust your ass in Tenkaichi 3. Like, I'll beat you. And they're always, like, trying to be better than the other one. And I think, from my perspective, from what I've seen based on their conversations, in most games, it seemed like Kyro insta-head of Gary. Gary definitely has Dragon Ball Fighters over Kyro. But in most games, it seemed like Kyro got ahead. And then in Edison format, as everybody has said, throughout 2023, a true hero was one of the best players in the format. So he was ahead of Gary there. But now Gary has a fucking win, and he got the win first, and Kyro can never take that from
him. Winning
the
next event. Ever. Kyro, one of the next, I'm putting it out right now. One of the next five events that Kyro enters, right? Because it's hard. Yu-Gi-Oh! Still RNG, and Kyro's gotten to the finals multiple times now. He's been to the finals of the biggest Yu-Gi-Oh! Edison tournament so far. Last year's Nationals, he got second place and got the big black rose and everything. So he's been to the top of the mountain. He just has to, you know, finally, like, scale it all the way. But I think one of the next five tournaments that he enters, he will be victorious, because now that Gary has a win, his fucking bitter childhood rival, and when we've been being very sweet about it, but I'm glad Kenny brought it up. They are bitter rivals, okay?
Listen,
like,
I'll tell you right now, there's no form of entertainment better than a 2 a.m. Discord call with Gary and Kyro playing a game with each other. And just the absolute amount of shit talk.
I will wake up getting ready for work. Like, I work from home. I'll wake up and it'll be literally like 7 a.m. I'm going to go take a piss. And I'll see that Discord has an active call in our group chat. And yep. it'll say this call has been active for 3 hours. And I'll just join it real quick just to like see if it's, because you know, sometimes Discord lies about calls being active. So I'll click it. And these two are literally like, yes, cream, get cream, Gary, get fucking cream. And I'm like, it is 7 a.m. He's like, not where I'm at, bitch, I'm in Korea. Gary's getting cream. And then Gary's like, you got that one. But what happened in Fighters? What happened in Fighters? He's like, well, you play lab code, bitch, it's not fair. It's not fair. Your characters suck. So they just like literally 7 a.m. on our time.
The most rowdy back and forth possible.
Yep.
Yeah, they're right. Insane.
I just want to ask real quick, Frazier or Sego, have you ever heard a much more bitter rivalry ever?
I even said, I was like, the level of petty that you two have with each other is insane to me. Like, it fuels both of you. Gary, you are one of the pettiest people
y'all
I know. And I didn't understand like why you were so petty until I realized that it stems from how you grew up with Cairo.
It has to do with Cairo, because I will 100%. Say this straightforward, that Cairo is always the instigator. He's always the one that lights the flame. But like he had, because Frazier's seen it from me, because I also act a fool with Cairo too when we're playing.
It's rubbed off on you for sure.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, you guys are ridiculous, all of you, all three of you. Yeah. But really, Gary and Cairo started it, and then Stego, you became like an addition to it. Now that the house has been like a thing, it's
they have so much hate. Much hate for each other, and but it's like all love, but it's so much hate.
Obviously, we're all still really good friends. It never has caused any issues. It really is what sharpens the steel. Like steel sharpens steel, and I do feel like the rivalries within our group actually help to make us better.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Like if you think, for example, right? So I even said this last year when I realized that like Cairo was really good at Yu-Gi-Oh, not just Edison format, but I realized he's good at Yu-Gi-Oh because we went to the same local, but I never really saw Cairo as like my peer in that way, just because I traveled to like YCS and stuff like that. And Cairo wasn't doing that for personal reasons at the time. So I always looked at him as like, oh, he's like a casual guy, like my friend from locals, whatever like that, but not on the same level of competition. And now that we're basically equal in the sense that we play Edison online, we play Yu-Gi-Oh online, so it doesn't matter, you know, what your situation is, you can just play. And that, so there's no more gatekeeping with like, oh, this tour guides are $150 each. Like a lot of people didn't have a fucking tour guide to play them in 2011 because they're $150 each. So stuff like that kept me from realizing the true talent that he had. And now that I'm seeing it, I was like, oh, he's like doing really, really well and topping a lot and shit like that. If you think that last year I wasn't going to come out swinging, getting my fucking tops in and doing everything and like establishing myself again, even though people be like, oh, you don't have to do that, like we know who you are, I was like, no, I still gotta prove myself because my friends need to see that I can do this shit too. I also was right there in top four at nationals and everything, you know, like I had to show like I can do this shit too, because I'm old and I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh in 6 years, but I know what I'm doing. I may know a thing or two about card games. So the rivalries, the point is not to brag, but the rivalries really do keep us like doing well, and they're the reason, they're one of the reasons why we, you know, as a house, we do well.
Yeah, so personally, for a hot minute, I was like, damn, Bridger, you're kind of washed up right now.
Yeah, I was getting scraped. I was getting, and my replays were most ridiculous thing. You guys saw them.
Yeah.
I did a video where I showed, I was like, you guys can see literally how savaged I get. Like, it'll be like,
I remember specifically it was the Lightsworn match against
it was my first tournament ever.
What was his name again? Times two.
Yes. I remember it was that. It's round one, game one of my first tournament.
Yeah, I remember Frazier was just like, Stango, I need to make a video because I need a vent. Because this is so bad right now. And I need to know that I'm not crazy.
Frame
so I
one,
need to talk about this.
My opponent literally goes Charge the Light Brigade, Mills, Wolf, Necro Gardener, Plague Sword Zombie. And then like, I'm just sitting here like, oh, okay. I obviously get fucking destroyed. Game two, I get Cold Wave double JD. So I was like, oh, and this is my first tournament ever in Edison format. This is my first experience. And so after that, I was like, damn, all right, maybe that was just bad luck. My second tournament Edison format, I play against a D.Va hero player and I'm using Nerlaris. And I go like trade in, send Nerlaris to grave. So I have Nerlaris in grave. And I go activate card destruction. This is game one. It's on stream. It's on Keegan's stream. It's game one. My opponent goes chain DD Crow to card destruction. Banish Nerlaris. I go, okay, I draw a new 5 cards. I draw into a brick. I pass. My opponent kills me on their turn. They go special malicious they go discard malicious to special greffer. Priority, banish malicious, summon malicious, activate Grefger's effect, pitch a guy, normal summon Plague Sweater Zombie, normal special summon Dark Arm, synchro, make level 8, make Goyo Guardian, attack for game. And I was like,
I remember this.
Yeah, this happened on stream. And I was like,
This was Randage, was it?
Literally that. But it had Malicious in it. So I don't know what exactly was going on. But it was like a spicy value turbo deck, I guess. But he killed me on his first battle phase. And the way it started was like, oh, my hand's broken. Like, I have trade in card destruction, Phantom of Chaos, everything. I think I went trade in, discard Nalaris, normal summon Phantom of Chaos, and then like play card destruction. It was crazy. Like, the whole situation was fucking ridiculous. But he like chained Diddy Crow, and I could not believe that, one, it was game one, and the fact that the Crow was in the main deck was already ridiculous. I was like, that is so specific, and the fact that he had it, and I was like, maybe he's main decking more, but then no, come to find out, it was just the one copy, and he just had it at that exact moment, and it happened to be on stream, and everyone got to see it. He killed me on his first battle phase. I was like, this is the type of shit that I run into. And what was cool about that is, so that was obviously like some really RNG bullshit that happened. Obviously, you can only RNG for so long before I eventually start like, okay, now I'm topping events, right? Like, I'm topping multiple events back to back to back. And then Cairo, who started off red hot, so he's topping everything from the beginning. Then it reverses. Like, towards the end, it becomes like this thing where he's just having these really bad. We watched me and Stengo, and Gary might have been on a call too. We watched Cairo lose to one of the worst Hero Beat players of all time. Like, the guy had Stratos and Grave and Ocean on the field. I think Kenny remembers me talking about this too. Guy at no point does he trigger Ocean to bring back Stratos. At no point. Every standby phase that passes, that Cairo's just struggling because his deck just bricked out of its gourd. He never resolves Ocean. And we're just watching, like, yo, he's giving you chances. This game should have been over six turns ago. The fact you made it to game three when he should have 2-0'd you clean, and then he ends up losing to this guy though. And I was like, this is the type of shit that happens to me and happened to me early in my Edison journey. And now it's happening to you on the back end. And he kept getting like savaged over and over. Like, there was like a several month period where Cairo was like, I don't understand how I can get savaged as many times. And I'm like, bro, it's just catching up to you. It's just catching up. Like, it's like literally you're experiencing what I experienced in the front. You're experiencing it in the back, you know? Pause. But like, that's literally what's happening.
Normally it's the other way around, but anyway.
But yeah, back to you, Gary. So
So go ahead.
So yeah, you're the first one in the house to get an Edison win, and that is fucking so insane. It's so cool that now, like, we have a winner, which means that all of us have to win now. Like, all of us have to officially
me dust off my deck.
Yeah, man, we have to win.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we gotta.
If Kenny wins before all y'all,
oh, that would be.
I don't know what to say.
Kenny's about to bust out those level eater monarchs again.
Listen, man, don't test me. All right, I'm gonna try to go to. I'm gonna try to go to a Philly regional.
Oh, we have this idea for content. So I guess we should spill it a little bit right here. This is a great opportunity. So Kenny and I plan to go to a Philly regional, and Philly regionals typically have like the Edison pods, and the goal is to get Kenny a win in one of the Edison pods so he can get a playmat. Like, if we can,
and then I can just talk shit.
Yeah, we got
people that haven't done it.
Yeah, we got to get Kenny an Edison playmat, like the hamster mat, whatever. They're going to change it soon. But whatever the playmat is, he has to win an 8-man pod in Edison format. And Kenny, as you guys know, he doesn't really play Yu-Gi-Oh that often, like nowhere near as much as the rest of the group. Like, he's
literally I'd play progression series once a week.
And that's not count. Like, that is literally, like, we play a specific
you guys are playing with fucking, you guys are playing with Painful Choice.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't count. And before these 14 episodes of the progression series, Kenny just basically wasn't really playing Yu-Gi-Oh at all. He just kind of like spectated when we would play in a group and he would join the call and watch. But for the most part, like, he doesn't play Yu-Gi-Oh as much. So out of all of us, for him to be able to get, you know, the mat would be insane. Also, it's really cool because I respect Gary and Stango for showing up to Philly regionals, and both of you actually won mats, like in those Edison pods, which I thought was really cool because both of you are like, for me and Cairo, we're very competitive. We've been doing this for a very long time. And you guys, until recently, weren't playing Yu-Gi-Oh! As much as me and Cairo have. Like, we definitely in the group have the most hours logged into Yu-Gi-Oh! The card game. To see you guys like start to take it seriously in these last couple years during the pandemic and everything like that, and then go to a regional and just get it on your first tries. Like, both of you got your mats immediately. Like, you did not go and be like, oh, I scrubbed. I wasn't able to get it. Like, no, you both showed up to the regional. Gary got like two of them at the YCS in Philly, and Stango got his like immediately. Like, yeah, I got it. I'm out. Like,
I got mine out with style. I did it. I did a Gary watched it in person. Very, very strong play against Sonny. Shout out to Sonny. I'm sorry, Sonny, but you got creamed.
Sonny got cooked. I watched the whole thing.
And Gary saw the face. Sonny looked down at the Icarus attack that happened. He's like, wow.
It's like that.
Oh, you're playing Black Wings.
Yeah, yeah, remember you gave me Black Wings.
Okay.
You gave me Black Wings to get the mat.
And Sonny was playing Diva Hero B at the time, like fully blinged out. I was like, damn.
Supposedly that's a bad matchup for Black Wings. That's what they tell us.
That is what they tell us, don't they? But they tell us a lot of things.
A single tournament, not a single.
You know what we always tell them though?
What do we tell them?
The house always wins. the house always wins.
That is the line. The house always wins. Oh, yeah. But so okay. RBET just happened, yeah. And you had to play a crazy bracket. Your bracket is actually nuts. You eliminated me. So you played me in round four. You eliminated me. It was 2-0 cream. You played against the only loss you had in the entire tournament was Jake XO, which I actually lost to him in the last tournament I played then. I was playing straight up frog monarchs with no special secondary engine. It was just like monarchs and frogs, and that like just tribute for Thessalos, tribute for Ryza, tribute for Kaius, and I end up losing.
Have you two ever played each other in tournament besides that weekend? Gary and Frazier?
I'm sure I've played Gary.
We played in locals once.
Yeah, I've played Gary in the past before.
Okay. And probably every other local I lost. Like, it was my first time ever beating Frazier.
Yeah. Like, I don't recall. Yeah, that's actually interesting, Gary. I don't recall ever losing to you. Now that I think about it.
Like, that's like a thing. Like,
well, he had to beat you to become champion.
Yeah.
Can I just say, leading up to the match, because when we all reconvened together after the round finished, the round prior, before they played their bracket match, we reconvened in our Discord call. We were like, okay, you know, we were spectating on DB and stuff like that. We're like, oh, you know, Gary, you did really well your round, blah, blah, blah. And then Gary's like, oh, shit. Frazier, we have to play. And we were all like, what? Added like,
I was 200, I was like, what are you 300 talking about?
Something people. Like, what the hell? I heard it in the way. All right, here's the thing about Gary. All right. Gary's probably the best and also the worst practice partner you can play before an event, because Gary is the most savagely lucky, raw, ruthless, disasterly motherfucker that you'll ever play in Yu-Gi-Oh! Gary will God hand you fucking five times in a row.
Yeah, it'll make you feel like you don't know what you're doing.
Yes, and the thing is, I heard in Frazier's voice when he finally like fully recognized, like, I'm about to play Gary in bracket. There was a certain vibrato to his voice that was just like, I already know what's about to happen.
Oh, I knew it. I knew immediately. I knew the way game one started. I knew the way game one went. The dark arm when it came down. I was like, all right, yeah, this is like clearly it. When you can just Gary, when it's his day, when it's his time, there's nothing that can stop him, which is like so crazy. Before YCS Richmond last year in November, right? Me and Gary traveled together to YCS Richmond. We stayed in the same hotel room and everything like that. The day before the tournament, so Friday night, I was like, hey, I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh in a while, especially in person, because we don't have a local anymore to play. Like, our local's still there, but they don't play Edison anymore. I was like, I haven't played like physically in a while, and I just in general, I've been making more content, and I'm not as competitive as I used to be. So I was like, let's get some rounds in with the Hero Frog deck. So I play him. He's playing Value Turbo, his deck, and I'm playing Hero Frogs, and I could not win a game. Okay, we played five total. I won one game. We played five total games. I got 2-0 the first set. The second set went to game 3, but I won one game. And in the 4 games that I lost, they were not close. And he summoned Kaius on me in almost every game, if not literally every game. And I never summoned a single Kaius on him in any game. And I'm playing fucking Hero Frogs. Like, I played triple Kaius and everything. I didn't resolve a single Kaius at any point. I didn't even see a Kaius. And this is also the trip where Xavier, my best friend, gifted me a max rarity Hero Frog deck. So I'm playing with like this crazy blinged out beautiful Hero Frog deck for the first time ever. And Gary's just putting it in my butt over and over and over again for no reason. Like, just like, oh, it's your birthday? I don't give a fuck. Like, get creamed, yeah. Get creamed, get creamed, get creamed. And I was like, and I said to him, I was like, okay, you got me real good. But tomorrow's the YCS. And I said, I got to get these bad luck matches out right now, so that way tomorrow when it really matters, I'm going to show up. And, you know, I showed up. I went.
Showed up, he did.
Yeah. But that's just, Gary's, like Stengel said, to start this whole thing off, Gary is the best and worst practice partner, because he's the best for showing you what the ceiling is of a deck, of like how
bad
it can get.
He'll knock your confidence out of you, though.
Oh, 100%. If you can be swayed, Gary's not the person for you. Like, you have to be me and Cairo to know, like, all right, I just lost to Gary, like, four games, four sets in a row, whatever. And I just have to know that shit's not real. And when it comes to the actual tournament, I will be fine. Because if your confidence can be shaken, Gary will fucking shake it. He was injured.
If you're
the night before Richmond, if I took those games, because those were the only matches of Yu-Gi-Oh! I played that week. So leading up to the event, like going to Richmond, I kept saying like, oh, we should probably play test. And every time I say that to Gary, we never do it. I'll be like, oh, we should probably do this. We never do it. I'll always say like, one day we should just go in the living room and just like play. And we never, ever, not once have we ever fucking set up and played Yu-Gi-Oh! To test for a tournament. Not once. So we're in the hotel at this point and we're like, all right, the tournament's actually tomorrow. Let's play test. We finally do it. He creams my shit. And in my head, I was like, damn, I know it's not real, but also like, damn. Like, when you get beat that bad, it's just kind of like awkward. Like, damn, like, I don't even know what to say. Like, I just got fucking destroyed. Yep. Like, they were not close. It was like, all right, yeah, I guess Gary's just out here. So I'm not surprised that his time was coming. I should have seen the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was basically saying, since I was like, all right, so my run, the first one we played, what were they on? They were on some kind of deck. I can't really. Let me collect myself.
Yeah.
They were on Mocking the Frog.
Yeah, that's like, that's also that's why you didn't remember.
Yeah.
that's why you didn't remember, Gary.
So I'm like, okay, well, I haven't really played against this deck too often, so I'm not sure how it's going to go.
But he always hears what Frazier says. Frazier's always there as a parish to be like,
Machina Control is the worst matchup for me.
No,
Machina Control. This is Machina Frog.
Oh, I thought Machina Control. Okay.
No. Machina Control would have gave Gary a run for his money, actually. Machina Frogs is a fucking meme.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I don't know how this is going to go, but we'll see. I ended up 2-0. I was like, okay, all right, that was cool. And then we would go to round two. It's Black Wings. I'm like, okay, well, I just had to pray they don't open nice.
Yep.
They didn't open nice, so I won 2-1, thankfully. So round three, I'm against Jake XO, which was mentioned earlier. Very good DB Hero player, DB Hero Zombie player. Very nice comment as well from the deck profile I had with Frazier. Really nice stuff. Very close set. And I'm like, I lost. I'm like, damn. And at this point, it's a top eight event. You have to top eight this event out of like 200 players for this tournament.
Again.
So like from this point on, and it's eight rounds. So anyways, this was round three and I just lost. So anyways, I have a 2-1 record and I have to win out no matter what. So I'm like, this is a feat that I've never accomplished before, ever. Like just winning out. I'm like, this is so hard. So at this point, I'm like, I'm fighting for my life.
Yeah, from
every single
fight for my fucking life.
Every single play, every single game, every single match, I'm fighting for my life. I'm like, bro,
I don't want to believe it.
I think we should really talk about to like hone in on one of the matches that I think was really significant is the one against Dragons, the Trap Dragon deck.
Yeah.
What round was this?
Yeah, this was round six.
Okay. So at this point, you are 4-1. It's round six.
I'm 4-1. I'm like, okay, all right. I'm playing against Trap Dragons. I'm like, I'm actually feeling confident in this matchup because one of the people I practice against, his name is Handicap Crimpin, a very good player. And
I don't know who the fuck you just talked to. Who was that?
Not the Handicap, sir.
You just have friends that I don't even know about. Who is Handicap Crimpin?
This is a very good Trap Dragon player.
This is why he can win. We don't have friends
of this person, though.
We don't have friends. That's why.
Like, even in the community, I know most of the people in the community. Handicap Crippen is crazy. Anyway, go on.
So I'm like, I'm feeling very confident in this matchup. And we go to game three. I'm like, I draw so terrible. And they open like Future Fusion or something like that. No, actually, no, they didn't open Future Vision. But I was getting beat down kind of like Hero Beat style, like just 1800 in. And I'm like, I can't literally do nothing. So, and I realized watching this replay that this person could have killed me.
Yes.
Like, just ended me. Ended my entire tournament run.
When you sent the replay to the group chat, I didn't realize it either because I wasn't paying full attention to it. But one of you pointed out that, like, the guy could have just won the game and there was nothing to it because you had no back row.
Nope.
And nothing really on the field, and he could have just gone banish Wyvern, summon Red Eyes, summon White Knight Dragon, and attack you for game. And there literally was nothing. There's nothing in his path. It wasn't even like, oh, you have like a bluff back row, and maybe he should have just played into it and said, fuck it, you know, it's not real. No, there's no back row. There was nothing to think about. He overtly had game in round six, and he just didn't see it. I guess
it's part of the game. I don't remember.
It is part of the game.
There's been multiple YouTube videos. I think Cairo has a video. I think Frazier put a video up. But there's times in tournaments where like your opponent loses to themselves, or you lose to yourself. Like, you could have won, and not even like a hindsight win. There was a play you should have done, and you just didn't do it, and that's why you lost.
Yep.
And so, but that's all part of the game. Like, that's part, like, there's, that doesn't take away from my win. That's the game. You know what I mean? Because there's a time where I gave you a win where I'm not, you know what I mean? That's just, every tournament run is going to have that.
Yep.
I love that. And a lot of times when somebody wins an entire tournament, there's that one opponent that should have beat them, no question. And when they get past that person, it's like, well, now that's, I'm not going to be put in that situation twice. Like, that was only going to ever happen once, where like somebody got
fate was supposed to take me out there.
Yeah, like if you dodged
that, they just needed to pick up the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, Stango was supposed to lose when his controller stopped working.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
Weirdly enough, the parallels are adding
you
up.
You see? Also, I told this story to Gary yesterday, and I guess I'll just tell it now because Gary was really shocked by this story. But when I won YCS Atlanta, I played a match in top eight. There's a future match for it. My opponent summons Aaron. They go, and I'm playing Gravekeepers. They go, Aaron, attack. And I go, I take 16. And he goes, damage step, chalice for game. And my heart dropped. The judge is sitting right there because it's top eight of a YCS. The judge goes, huh? And I'm like, wait, I'm at 2150. And he's like, I have you at 2000. And I was like, no, I'm at 2150 because I took an attack from a Garof or something at some point in the game. And so I was at 2150, and I guess he just didn't do the 50 right, or somehow he just didn't have the right life point. So
the 50 got lost, Sam.
Yeah, somehow something got lost. And
exactly why 50 numbers are peak.
Yeah, they're annoying.
This is exactly why they're real.
Yes, also at the same time, right?
That's true.
At the same time. So he goes chalice for game, and Aaron goes up to 2000. So I'm like, I have me at 150 after the attack. So the judge is like, I have the life points here. I've been writing them down the entire match as I'm supposed to. And Frazier is at 2150 before the attack. And now he's at 150. And so the guy, the Lightsworn player, he goes, all right, well, if he's at 2150, he puts the chalice back face down. And the judge was like, no. You activated chalice. Like, that happened, and that cannot be, like, you can't just, like, go back now that you have the correct life points. You should have been, first of all, keeping life points correctly. We don't know how, none of us know how you got the 2,000 on the dot when everyone else has 2150. That's the first thing. Second thing is, like, yeah, you legally activated chalice. You can't just, like, take it back now. And he would have won if that chalice didn't get activated that way. Like, I would have been eliminated. It was game three. I would have been eliminated from the tournament right there if that didn't happen. What ended up happening later is, like, I ended up taking the 2,000, so I'm at 150. I ended up using a solemn judgment, and I won the match with 75 life points. Like, and then I win the whole YCS. And so that started it. Like, I won a match where I should have been eliminated from the tournament. 100%, if he got to keep the chalice, I would have lost the game. But because of, like, divine intervention happened, and I ended up getting another turn, which I ended up drawing solemn, and then, like, I ended up doing a play, and then I solemned his judgment dragon or some shit off the top, and I was at 75 life points. And you read the feature match, I won with 75 life points. And I remember walking over to McCabe, sweating. Like, I was drenched. Like, I was so fucking sweaty. I was like, bro, I just won a match. Mind you, we're both in top four now. So, like, me and McCabe, like, he has no emotions, though. But I walk up to him.
Yeah, he was probably looking at me just like,
he was match, so huh? calm. I was so annoyed how this is my first top. McCabe has top YCS's before at this point. Like, I have zero tops. This is my first one. I'm freaking out. I'm sweaty. I'm, like, happy. I walked up to him, I'm like, bro, I just won the craziest match ever. He's like, oh, yeah? I'm like, yes. Oh, my God. I just had, I won with 75 life points in a feature match. He's like, oh, that's crazy. I'm like, yes. It was fucking insane. I had 75 life points. I solemned at 150. He's like, wow. And I'm just like, freaking out. And McCabe's just the calmest person ever. He's like, yeah, I have to play Hoagie now and top four. And I'm like, oh, I have to play the X-Saber player. And then I was like, all right, we'll see you in the finals. But the rest is history. It's just crazy because that divine intervention of you were supposed to lose. I'm using air quotes because at the end of the day, what was supposed to happen is what happened. Yep. So, you know, Gary won the match where his opponent could have won with the red eyes, white dragon bullshit and all that stuff. His opponent should have won, but he didn't. And my opponent should have won as well, but he didn't. And we ended up winning the tournament. Jake Finney, there's another story. This is the last one I'll give before moving on. But Jake Finney, the YCS that he won in Ohio in 2016, he's playing against Cordero, who's actually a friend of the podcast, been on the show, Vexicus 666, 4666. Cordero got his first top at this event. And it's really crazy because content creators typically suck at Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, they typically do not top events, like, usually. But Cordero was in top cut with Magic Spectres. He played against Jake Finney. Jake Finney, at the time, is one of the best players. And he has him beat. Like, Cordero has the game won, but he plays a pot card that says, like, you can't deal damage this turn. And all he had to do, literally, and I'm like, not, this is not hyperbole, all Cordero had to do to win was simply say attack. All you had to do was go draw for turn, and it was an open shot. There's nothing impeding his path. Magic Specters also, for what it's worth, they can't be targeted or destroyed by card effects. They all say that. So even if there were back row, like you could have Mirror Force, you could have Deep Prism, you could have Wing Blast, you could have Regeki Break, you have whatever you want. All Magic Specters say, every single one of them says, this card cannot be destroyed by card effects or targeted by card effects. They're fucking ignorant anyway. So even if your opponent had back rows, there's no reason not to attack with these things. Anyway, so he draws for turn, and I think that the situation is like they're about to go into time, and all he has to do is just be like, attack first. And you could play this pot, I'm pretty sure, at main phase two after you deal damage, and then it'll like, the missing the damage thing won't apply. But instead, he goes draw for turn, he draws the pot, and like plays it, gets a card, and then like, I think he still tries to attack or whatever, and then they're like, oh, you do no damage because, you know, you played that pot card. He's like, oh, fuck, you're right. Pass, and then time is called, and like, he ends up losing the match that way. And wow. And it's crazy because Jake Finney wins that YCS now. So my point in saying that is like, he technically would have lost if his opponent just like simply set attack and did the most obvious thing, because these plays that we're talking about are obvious, like the not using Chalice when your opponent's life points, summoning Red Eyes when your opponent has an open field, and in this case just attacking with Magic Specters that can't be targeted or destroyed anyway. It's like all of this is very like blatant and it's right there, there's nothing to it, but somehow divine intervention, and it's like, yeah. And then this person, like, after that happens, it's just a weird thing where the person wins the tournament after that. So I need Cairo to get into a situation where like we can all see game, like everyone watching stream, everyone watching can just like blatantly see it, like you are dead and an opponent just doesn't do it, and we're like, oh shit, you got a return, and he wins that match, he's winning the tournament. That's the day when he's gonna win. When that funny happens, that's
divine
the
intervention happened again in the finals.
Yes, well, that, yeah, well, you could talk about that was wild. Gary was playing in the finals. Yeah, go ahead, Gary. Talk about all your right. You got Pina dead to rights, blatantly.
Yep. All right. So I think this is game one or game two?
It was game one.
It was game one. All right. So I'm in a situation where he has a Treeborn Frog in defense, a back row that he just set, and I have a Brionic in defense mode that I stole with a Goyo Guardian, and a Vayu, little guy, 800 attack in defense mode. So I have three monsters. I draw it to my last card. So I have four cards total. All I have to, so I activate Brionic's effect, pitch a card to bounce the back row of Pina. And let it go through. I'm like, okay. And what I decided to do was switch Brionic to attack, and he is at 3,000 something light points.
3,300,
like,
I think.
Very, very low.
Yeah.
So I switch Brionic attack, and I decide to attack with Goyo Guardian into Treeborn, take it, and attack with Brionic. I did this very fast.
Yeah,
very, very fast, within like 30 seconds. And the whole stream was watching it, went crazy.
The stream went, even Keegan was like, all right, that's game. Like, we're going to game two. You know, it's blatantly game right there. As soon as he drew for turn and set a back row with the Treeborn in defense, so he has no cards, to be clear. So just to like get full context,
yep.
Gary's opponent has just Treeborn Frog, draws to one card, and sets it in the back row against a Brionic, which is, that just means 100% game. Like, to everyone watching, it's like, okay, well, that's not Battle Fader now. Right? Like, it's nothing. It's literally nothing at this point. It could be Sinister Serpent, but outside of that, it's nothing. So, like, once he bounces it back...
Sinister Serpent!
Once he bounces it back, like, bruh, that's just it. Like, it's just game over. Like, it's literally that, just...
Oh, bruh.
Nah, he wasn't playing GOAT format. You know what I mean? You can't... Yeah. You can only set him in GOAT format.
Yeah. So, literally, it's just game on board if he just puts Vayu in attack mode and, like... He doesn't do it. So
he got ratted.
But then what happens after you don't kill your opponent? What do they do?
What happens after is that my opponent draws into the perfect card to punish me.
As they should.
Kai's
Bridger the always likes to say that he loves how Yu-Gi-Oh! teaches you a lesson real quick.
It helps you. It's harsh. So much.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a harsh teacher. It's mean. Like, it's so weird how mean Yu-Gi-Oh! Is when it comes to teaching people lessons. Gary gave this man one more turn.
One chance.
He gave literally this man one more draw. Turn. And this man fucking drew Kaius, which is the perfect card because it's like Kaius banishes Goyo and attacks over Brionic, and then you just have nothing. And you're top decking too. So like, now the situation is completely reversed. But Divine Intervention
happened once more, and I drew the most broken card ever printed.
Look at the fingers.
Yes.
The fingers on the brain.
Brain control. I activated melee, and it won game one.
Yep. The rest is history. Then you just
wait. I have a question. Is that the brain control that people said that won you the game? Like, won you the tournament? Is that?
Well, he won with brain control game one and game three.
And game three.
Okay.
But, yeah, like, here's the thing.
You were going to win game one anyway with Aberrant Control.
Correct.
Number one. Yeah. And number two, I already know what Frazier's going to say, but I'll let Frazier say.
No. So I actually want to stay on that, what you were saying a little bit too, Kenny, because I think that point is very valid. Gary was going to win the game anyway. And realistically, in Pina's situation, he's the one who had the divine intervention in that case where he got an extra turn that he wasn't supposed to get anyway, right? Like, in that situation, that's just like obviously a huge punt that your opponent did, and you're very fortunate to have that happen. And I acknowledge the same thing happened with me when I won my YCS. Like, I got very lucky where divine intervention happened, and like my opponent did something very like that they just never would do. Like, how many times do you miscalc life points for a game and like you lose because of that? That's very rare. So like what you're saying is like, yes, 100%, you weren't supposed to be in a tournament, or you weren't supposed to win that game anyway, because realistically, like, your opponent just has you beat. And it's not like some elaborate play needed to happen either. I could understand. No,
it was the Scarta card.
He already did that part. He literally set up the kill. He did everything right except putting value in attack mode, which is the most basic part of the turn. Like, the hard part of the turn, even though there's really no hard part, but the hardest part was choosing what to bounce. Because you could argue bouncing the Treebone Frog is also fine and being like attack into the back row or whatever. But like, once he chose the right card to bounce, which is the back row, once he did that part, there is nothing else really to think about. So it's kind of like... It's kind of like, I could see if we were talking about some elaborate 4 or 5 step play where he had to go like flip a hamster, set a Ryko, then tribute the Ryko for Kai's that he just summoned face down, and then target the back row, and then special Greffer by pitching another Kai's in his hand, and like this weird obscure play that you never ever see. And it's like, so like, oh, so many steps to it. It's like, no, bro, this is literally just putting his monster in attack mode, and that's it. And there's nothing else to it whatsoever. So for all intents and purposes, yes, it is like a misplaced throw, whatever you want to call it, but it's also like, it shouldn't have happened. It was just pure nerves in the finals that happened. And in 100 out of 100 games, if they played again, that would not happen. Like, that was the one, I should say that, like, that was the 1 out of 100 times that would have happened. If you played that game 100 times, I guarantee that your value would just be in attack mode and you would just win the game outright. 100.
Yeah. I gave you an extra turn. The gods gave you Caius.
Yeah.
And when it came back to me, I got brain control to set everything right.
Yeah, just to give the stream something to talk about too, because I think that made it hype. Like, that made the finals very hype after that happened. So
yeah.
It was kind of
for
like,
the content.
Yeah, for the content. Game two, you end up getting creamed. And then game three. Go ahead, Gary.
Game three, I saw a line where my opponent has absolute zero. I think
a known torrential.
Oh yeah, they have a known torrential because I trap dilated Diego. So they have a trap, so they have torrential face down, absolute zero, and I think 2 cards in hand. At this point I'm like, I don't think they play Battlefield anymore. So we'll just ignore that. My field is nothing. I have, I think, Mirror Force set,
and MST.
I think some other MST set, and I'm like, I have a full grave. Like, I have Vayu Sirocco, Plague, and a little Vayu in there. I'm like, I could do the most nasty, and I draw into Brain Control. I could just end him right now.
Yeah, your graveyard was double Vayu Sirocco, and you had Plague in hand.
Yep, double.
And Brain Control in hand. And it's like,
okay, oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, I know the back row. And you know it's torrential. You trapped Dutch Shooter. Everyone saw it, right? Like, everyone watching can see, like, all right. So the hand is known. All the traps are known. You MST his back row, summon Plague, banish for Vayu's effect. Yep.
Yep.
Synchro.
And he let that go. I was like, okay, no TD Crow. That's nice.
Yeah, he needed Crow right there. Crow was the only saving grace. It's like, if he doesn't have Crow, that's it. And you did some crazy ass play where you like made level 8. Then you like summon Armor Master and then brain controlled his guy and
and killed him. He was at 6,000. Killed him.
It's actually wild that he was at that much life points too. I think the only attack he took that entire game was an Armageddonite. I think he took like one Armageddonite attack and was at literally 6,600 and died at 6,600. Yep. Like, crazy how strong Vayu Turbo is to be able to do that shit. That is not okay. 6,600, you're dead. So, broken ass deck. But how do you feel playing that deck though, Gary? Does it actually feel like you're playing the best deck? Does it feel really strong?
No, I do not feel like it's the best deck. I feel like it's just like an okay deck. In the hands of a very, very good player, they will literally win every single time.
That's fair.
Because what I realized about the deck is it's just slowly like poking you, annoying you at every single point, and you get to a point where like even with Frog sometimes, which they have natural like card advantage over time because of +1s generated by a Treebore Frog. I'm sometimes I'm like, I have more cards than them. I don't know why.
Why do I have more cards?
I don't know why I have more cards, but listen, I do.
The amount of times that me and Frazier have played against Frog players, and we're just like, where did all your cards go?
Yeah,
like, this isn't usually concerning. How it happens.
Yeah. It's playing too many cards per turn. But yeah, Vayu is just extremely consistent, and that makes it one of the best like decks in the format, because Edison is a format where there's never going to be a tier zero deck ever. It's just too diverse for tier zero. Tier zero means that every top cut is like over 70% one deck. And that's not what we're doing. You were the only Vayu Turbo player in top eight, to be clear. There were three Frog players in top eight, two Black Wings, one Zombie, and like one Diva Hero. So there were five different decks outside of Vayu Turbo, if you think about it. So there's Vayu Turbo, there's Plant Frogs, which is its own deck. Then there's two Hero Frogs, which is their own deck. Then there's Black Wings, there's Zombies, there's Diva Hero. So in total, we have like 5 to 6 different decks, like actual these are different decks, right? Like you cannot... Mm-hmm. Lump these decks together in any kind of way. There are 5 or 6 different decks in top eight, and this deck that has been winning almost every tournament in the last year just won again, and being the only represented in top eight is like really a testament to the narrative of like, yeah, this is the best deck. It's the best deck by results too, and that's kind of what I am just going to start preaching to people, is like, you can have your opinions. We all have our like thoughts and theories about Yu-Gi-Oh and Edison and all that stuff. People, everyone has their, you know, opinion. Everyone for channel, everyone who's in the Discord, everyone thinks they know like what the best deck is. At one point I was saying it was Black Wings, right? And I stood behind that until I couldn't stand behind it anymore. And when I couldn't stand behind it anymore was the end of last year, when the math was given to me that Vayu had won like 12 tournaments. And I was like, holy shit. That is just like, I'm a math guy. That's what I do for a living. That's how I make my money. That's how I afford these fucking clothes. For me, once you show me the numbers, I don't like fighting against math. People like to use their theories and hypothetical bullshit, and that's cool, and you know, it's fun to do, like throw your hypotheticals out there. At the end of the day, numbers for me are always going to be the end all be all. So once I see like, this is just winning everything, and people are like, oh, but like, it's also played by a lot of people. I'm like, bro, in these 200 person tournaments, there's like 25 people playing the deck. Like, I don't, like 25 people playing the deck, like sure, not everybody is, first of all, most people are not good at Yu-Gi-Oh! I always say like most people who play Yu-Gi-Oh! If you really think about it, out of everyone who plays Yu-Gi-Oh! Probably less than 1% actually top a YCS. If you really think about it.
Even if it's highly represented, right? A lot of the top eights that you look at, it's not like the top eights are 4 or 5 Vayus every time.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, once you get the top eight, I don't care how many were in the tournament. Once you get the top eight, there's usually a pretty good diversity of decks. Like, yes, in this one,
there was 6
this
decks?
Was the only Vayu Turbo.
Yeah.
So the fact that it won, you can't say like, oh, there was 100 Vayu Turbos. None of them made it to the top eight except this one. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
This is the one. So in all these tournaments, there's top eights. And it's not like at any of these tournaments, 5 of the top eight is Vayu Turbo.
Right, because then like, if it wins, it's like, well, no shit, it won. There were 5 of them, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, bro, there was 1 of them. And even at Nationals last year, when Matt Kalinda won over Cairo in the finals, there were only 2 Vayu Turbos in top eight that time. And, you know, they won the whole event. And obviously, like, you know, it is anecdotal to be like, oh, it won the event or whatever. But how many times do you have to look at that same thing happening before you accept that it's just better? Like, I can see if it only happened a few times. When something happens a few times, I get it. It's like, bro, yes, the deck won like Dragon Turbo, for example, has won, I think, 1 event. Dragon Turbo's won 1, or I guess, you no, 2. It won 2, because 1 was in real life Moreno Valley. It won RBET Moreno Valley, and then it won in RBET Online. So Dragon Turbo has won 2 events, 2 different people. It's never won an event since, but if it continued to win, I can't keep saying like this deck isn't good. It isn't consistent. That's just ridiculous. And even now I don't say it's not good anymore. And I also don't say it's not consistent anymore, because it's like, it keeps doing really well in the hands of this one player. Clearly it's actually more so the player, I'm starting to think, than the deck. Like I'm leaning more towards that now, because one guy is it's kind of like the Skyjay with Incineroar. People don't look at Incineroar as being real, flat out. Like, if you think about Incineroar, if somebody said to you 6 months ago, where would you put Incineroar in the tier list, whatever, most people would be like, probably close to bottom tier, maybe mid tier, at highest mid tier. And you have this one guy who literally is carrying the character, getting top eights as super majors, not fucking like regionals, not locals. I'm talking about super majors. The Japanese are there, the Europeans are there, Gluto and all of them, like the French Dimension, like everybody's in attendance. And this Incineroar player is literally getting top eight. He's beating our faves. He's beating Leo. Mm-hmm. He's beating Tweak. He's beating these fucking people who are like considered the upper echelon. And so after a certain point, there's only so many times you can say Incineroar is not real before you have to realize, I don't know if that's true. And if you put it in the hands of a good player, then the narrative has to change, because clearly this person keeps topping and doing well with this character, with this deck. Yeah, yeah, it's better than you think. Like, it's actually just more real than you think.
Yeah, honestly, for me, I think the biggest selling point for Value Turbo, you know, just kind of in a statistics manner and also just a personal opinion manner of why I think it's the best deck, I think the results speak for itself, but I also think that Edison format, because of how absolute suffocated the side deck is, I think it's one of the hardest side decks to side for.
Yeah.
And I also think it's one of the decks that, like, pretty much has, like, the least amount of impactful hate in the side deck. Like, frogs have, like, Soul Release. They have Fossil Dyna that, like, they get absolutely ruined by. Hero Beat, you know.
Super Poly, yeah. Snowman Eater. Like, there's so many.
Super Poly, Snowman
every deck,
Eater.
Consecrated for Black Wings, Starlight Road for Black Wings, Dust Raider for Black Wings. There's so many cards that are good against every deck. And then Vaya Turbo is just like, there's really nothing to side against me. Like, really?
Yeah, every it's card like, you, side oh, you could it? Side a Dust Tornado to, like, get rid of my Bottomless, but then, like, deal with my Ryko.
That's just a one for one, like, too. It's like, okay, that's really nothing. Like, that's yeah. literally the definition of, like, that's not even for me, really. You didn't really put that aside for me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's only so long before you can cope, or have to stop coping, I should say. There's only so long before you have to stop coping and being like, all right, this deck clearly, it wins just every single tournament at this point. Like, hyperbole, but still, it wins majority
of
the tournaments.
It wins a lot.
Yeah.
So
it has the most wins.
How petty Kara and I were. So I was started, like, I didn't like Black Wings anymore. So I was, like, looking, shopping around for decks. And when I knew I had the deck is when I started beating Kyro consistently with Vayu Turbo. I was like, oh,
this is really probably is. And there's even more lore to this, because Vayu Turbo has been Kyro's bane, has actually been the gatekeeper of several, like, higher, like, further runs and even tournament wins. Like, Vayu Turbo has been Kyro's bane, and, like, of course Gary gets the Kryptonite and he wields that shit like a sword on Kyro.
Yeah, that's another thing. I guess that does make sense, because you're playing the deck that he hates the most in the format. It stopped him from getting nationals. Like, if Kyro won nationals, do you understand, like, the level of accomplishment that, like, that's such a big accolade, right? Like, that was the first Ultimate Time Wizard tournament. It's like a huge fucking accolade to have. And he already was red hot the whole year. So that would have been, like, the perfect cherry on top. And you're playing the deck that stopped that from happening. So I get it. Like, now I'm not, I didn't think about it until now.
It's like when
that.
Hungerbox stopped the three, though.
From who?
From Mango. Mango was supposed to win. He won two
he
Evos in a row.
Three Evos in a row, and Hungrybox stopped it.
Three.
It'd be like that.
Yeah.
Hungrybox stopped it. And he didn't even go on to win the tournament.
No, that's wild. I thought y'all were talking about it was grand finals at least.
No. He
Hungrybox
he
was so happy to have just stopped the three vote. Like, it was so funny. It was such a funny thing, because, like, he took so much more pride in the fact that he stopped the three vote, and, like, he didn't care that he didn't win the tournament. And Mango was like, you're such a fucking butt. Like, at least win the tournament. Like, what the fuck?
Yep.
Yeah, Gary beat me, and I was like, all right. And then he won the tournament, so I'm like, all right, nice. Like,
all right. Yeah.
Good shit. When I beat Frazier, like, I was like, damn, that was actually easy.
Listen, I already knew, because, like, it was a game between the housemates, so we were just chilling in Discord, like, you know, we're not going to DB type to each other. We're going to be in a Discord call saying, like, oh, you know, draw phase, I'm doing this.
Yeah, it was
casual as hell, but I heard in Frazier's voice when it was like it was go time. He was like, "All right." And I was like, "Oh god, like, Frazier feels it coming. Like, he already knows what's about to happen."
Listen, I just know what it's like to play against Gary. I think we all do at this point.
Yeah, we all do.
So it's like, as soon as we played, when he like dropped the dark arm, first of all, game one, his first play was Brain Control Kaius immediately. And then I got dark arm that same game. Then game two, I got dark arm again. I was like, all right, well, clearly is this kid's day. Like, it's his day. We should have all known. I should have told everybody RBET, you can all go home now. I guess you're already home. You can all go outside now.
Yeah, I found the winner.
Yeah,
Gary's here. I don't know if you guys know, but he's here.
I should have held up Gary's arm and been like, hey, I got him. Like, he's already here. You guys can all go outside. Touch grass. The winner's here. Yep. But yeah.
Order Chinese food.
Exactly. But yeah, great win, Gary. Congrats again. I'm really happy somebody brought a gold medal to the house. And now it's time for the rest of us my problem is that, and this is the real talk, you guys know this, but just for the people listening who might not know my life, but as a content creator, like podcasting, creating YouTube content every single week, a lot of it too, and then also I'm a full-time worker, it is hard for me to focus on Yu-Gi-Oh! Seriously as a competitor. Like, every time I want to, every time I want to, it's just like, is it better to use my time to just play test Yu-Gi-Oh? Or is it better for me to use my time to grow like my YouTube channel, the podcast, stuff like that? And every time I pick the YouTube channel and the podcast, every single time. And I don't foresee a future where I choose trying to get a Yu-Gi-Oh accolade over the content. I just love this way more. And I've already accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish in Yu-Gi-Oh. So for me, it's like every time that choice comes up, and it comes up often where I'd be like, people ask me, Christian Urena, he's like a three-time YCS champion now. At Vegas last week, he asked me, he walked up to me, he's like, yo, you ever think about coming back? And I was like, honestly, no. I was like, I do too much now, and I know what it takes. I know what it takes to be one of the best now. Like, you have to play so much. I used to play so much when I was competitive. When I was topping multiple YCSs a year, nationals and all that shit, it just took a lot of effort and a lot of work. And I simply don't have that drive to do that anymore because I'm not incentivized to do that. It's like, what does that actually do? It would be great
for your content. Drive is in other places at the moment. Yeah. There's just not enough time in the day.
It's not. Like, if I had an extra 10 hours, I would be one of the best Yu-Gi-Oh players to ever touch the cards because I would use those extra 10 hours to, like, do that. But I just don't. I only have 24.
Well, that's not true. You would spend at least 6 of those hours playing Slay the Spire.
I would, because that is my game. That is my game. No question. I play that shit so much. But yeah, like, I love that you guys, these last like 2 years of Edison, all of you, like, it's been amazing just watching all the accomplishments build up for the house and seeing it. And now culminating into an actual big tournament win. Over 200 people played in RBET, and there were a lot of heavy hitters. A lot of the best players who play Edison format were in that tournament.
And he even conquered his demon.
Yes.
Yeah. He beat Ron.
He even got a personal demon slay.
And it was not looking good either. It was not looking good.
I knew. As soon as I beat him, I was like, oh, y'all losing. I don't care.
Who it's on. It's on.
Yeah.
That's what's up. I had people message me, people that like I didn't even know followed Yu-Gi-Oh! Really. And they were like, did Gary win a tournament? And I was like, how do you know that?
How do you know
that? Did Gary just win? And then they'd be like, oh, I saw it on your YouTube channel. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Yep. It's true.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yu-Gi-Oh's great. Oh, my God.
What?
Before we started this podcast, the short that you just posted today, Kenny, on our channel, it was like 250 views. It is now at 3K. And
the shorts? Listen, shout out to all of y'all for loving the shorts, man. The shorts do really fucking well. The Who's That Yu-Gi-Mon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that you guys all enjoy them.
Yeah,
they're
subscribe to the channel if you like them. We do them basically daily, every day but Sunday. So if you're interested in seeing
even God rest it.
God rest it. It's basically like trivia. You know, if you like trivia, interactive trivia, then
I remember. I remember someone said TikTok shorts. You guys should do them. I remember.
It always takes us a while, Stango. Okay, you were saying it. You were. I will give you your credit. Pretty much every suggestion you've made has been good. Like, I've taken multiple suggestions from you over the years, and every single one that you've made so far has been, like, pretty good. So I will definitely give you your flowers and that you did say, like, we should do, you know, this type of content as well.
I ain't giving that man shit.
I mean, he's your cousin. Right? You don't have to do anything. I ain't giving him shit. Unplug his controller.
He just got a Genesis medal. What more does he fucking want?
He wants his flowers.
Sit down.
He also wants his flowers.
Yeah.
You know what we should do?
My flowers, too.
We should actually plan a get together, like all of us, like a little celebration type of thing. Kenny's birthday passed and we didn't get to hang out because Gary ended up catching COVID.
Gary got fucking COVID. Dude, that happened to me again, by the way. The weekend Frazier went to Vegas, I was supposed to go to New York.
Oh, wait, that didn't happen?
Kevin got COVID.
Wow.
Oh, Anthony's husband. The last two hangouts that I had planned, one was Frazier, Gary, Stango, etc. Medina, etc. Gary got COVID, and so that messed up. And then the weekend that Vegas happened, I was supposed to go to New York, and then somebody got COVID, and I was like, what the? All my plans keep getting fucking cockblocked by COVID.
Yeah, it's actually wild. It was very unexpected, but we didn't get to celebrate Kenny's birthday. We didn't get to celebrate Stango or Gary's newest accomplishment in person or anything like that. I think it would be cool to like us all get together, try to plan this shit again, and just pray that nothing wild happens. And yeah, we just like maybe go to Hibachi or something, just do something together as a group, you know, something inexpensive but fun. And then we could just, you know, do what we always do, like play Smash, play fucking whatever that kitchen game is, Overcooked, stuff like that. Maybe Slay the Spire is supposed to be coming out soon, so the board game,
it's supposed to come out between March and April. They're going to start getting shipped. The board game is going to start getting shipped at the end of March, so the end of this month. And they'll be shipped out through the end of March, through April, and then the beginning of May. So like I don't know exactly when I'll get it. I could get it in like the first wave of shipments, or knowing my luck, the last wave, but between March and April, I mean March and May,
I feel like it's just to be out. I feel like if Frazier plays this board game, he's going to be like, "But Kenny, you can't leave with this. This has to stay here, so like I can play with it." He's going to be man. but you can't leave with it though. It has to stay here.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But I think we're about ready to wrap up, right?
Yeah, we're ready to wrap up. So let me just give a shout out to everyone on our Patreon real quick, because you guys are the lifeblood and the backbone of everything that we do. It's amazing having you guys supporting us. On top of that, I have been mentioning that we are going to do a special tournament for March. We're going to be giving away $100, and any other donations that we get, we'll also be adding those to the prize pool.
Well, while Fridge is doing this, I just want to say thank you guys for having me on this podcast. It was great.
Thank you for winning.
Well, thank you, Stego, for winning. He started it all.
It's true.
I really did start it all. I told Frazier, I was just like, listen, it's either you or Cairo at Vegas. Like, one of you need to win. Like, I started the win streak in the West Coast. It's time for one of you to pick up the ball.
There was a serpent that was sinister.
There was a sinister serpent in Vegas. All right. So there are 55 in the party member or higher tier, and there's over 100 across all tiers. So we're going to read off the 55 in the party member or higher tier. We have Connie, the Cult of Volvi, Leon, after 10 long years, my handless combo is complete. We have Xavier Swift. And then let me scroll down. Hylian, Dimitri Barnes, Father Multiverse, Dom the Goat, Giovanni Avalos, Alex Flamer, Henri Reynolds, Dan Vrabel, Dennis Milburn, First to Home, Mitchell, Nels, Vince Marquette, Dallas Bailey, KJ, Roz Weiss, Agents Over Tengu, Alex Ahern, Philip Campa, Edison Club, Kyle Botelho, Guac is Extra, Sugal, Vicky Venomon, Elijah Barfoth, and then
Tyler Tadeo, Volvi the Mega Monarch, Enraged Peacock, Janitor 215, Thomas Rude, Joshua Carroll, Eric Chai, Brian Moore, Type P336, Is the Soul King Baby, Gingerilla, I'm Just a Little Nasty Sometimes, Me Too, Frozen Go Dojo, Auntie Did Nothing Wrong, David V, Nextastic, B-Dog23, Felipe Glenn, Hershey Bar, Empoister, Romeo Junk, Synchron Schneider, Tyler Frasher, B-Man, Sasha Egger, Daniel Anderson, Owen Tedford, and Noah Mowdy.
Again, thank you guys so much for your support. Special shout out and congrats to Stengo and Gary OG here for winning back-to-back weekends for the house. And yeah, we'll definitely hear more from you guys in later podcasts. We plan to do some other podcasts that are not even Yu-Gi-Oh! Related, because we do play like other games together, like DC deck building and stuff. So we're going to do a big group podcast with like Luke Feeney and all the boys about DC. We've been planning that for years, and then we kind of stopped playing the game, but we still want to do that podcast. And then there's been talks about playing the game again anyway, so that might be firing up soon. Rumblings of that. Yep, DC. Yeah. You know? Oh,
and Cairo, if you're still listening, hold this L. I got it done first.
Yes!
We're going to all get together. As I always say, do the things that make you happy, including being extremely petty to your rival. I'll catch you in the next one.
First fucking place. Just it's beautiful.